Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring. It's your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan, my boxing fan's official radio show. Well, interesting past Saturday here for boxing fans. Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson end on a TKO. Today, the WBC announced that they are overturning that decision. Now, let's clarify this really quick, okay? They're giving the belt back to Bernard Hopkins, Chad didn't even retain it after. Okay, we'll get a little bit into that. But Bernard's getting the belt back, but the decision still stands until CSAC either overrules it and sends it to a draw or no contest. Now, I know on Section 39, the rules, okay, because plenty of people have sent in, you know, email after email about what has happened Saturday night with those two rounds and those two guys here, okay? Yes, Section 339 does state that if the fight is stopped before the fourth round by intentional or unintentional foul, it's a draw. But the thing is this. The ref, Pat Russell, didn't call it a foul. I could be wrong, but I don't remember, I watched it a few times, but I was really more or less paying attention to the tackle, if anything. But I don't remember him calling it a foul, Gabe. Do you remember Pat Russell saying it's a foul?
I remember him saying, actually, there's no foul. It's a TKO. I'm not ruling a foul. He was very, very adamant about that point, and it's a significant point. You know, we're going to go back. There's actually precedent for this, and my writing partner, John Novoselic, we've had him on the show before from Doghouse,
right,
pointed out that the Umberto Soto fight with Giovanni Lorenzo that was poorly officiated by, surprise, Joe Cortez, the WBC gave the belt back to Soto because they didn't feel that it was a foul, that it was intentional what he did or unintentional. Lorenzo to sit on the ground forever and bleed while Joe Cortez looked around like he had no idea what was going on. They gave the belt back, but the commission never overturned the ruling, and it is still a DQ in four rounds. So just because – I feel like we're in politics. Just because this has happened, the dimpled Chad still may end up with the TKO too, whereas, you know, Hopkins has his belt back, but that's – come on, I did that. Which I find very disrespectful to the local commission. They don't meet till December 13th. I haven't been a special counsel to guide this whole process. But for him to just go and say, you know what, I don't give a damn what you guys think or the officials that I approved before the fight, the jurisdiction that I allowed my title fight to be under, and I took
right.
a sanctioning fee to, I'm just going to take my belt back because I can do that. It's people like Jose Suleiman that give Jose Suleiman a bad name. You know, it's behavior like this that makes us go, you know what, we don't want the belts. We're sick of the belts. And I defend the belts. I think they're necessary to guys, you know. Chad Dawson needs that belt. But I'm sorry, you know, it's just, it's not due process. Wait for the commission to make their decision. Then you jump in.
Know what that is to me? Honestly, you know what that is? That's the WCE's way of strong-arming CSAC or any other commission to kind of sway. It's an absolutely politic way of swaying their decision because they're basically saying, we already kind of took the steam off of it, the heat from it, so why don't you just lean towards what we're doing right now? You know, it's the Jedi mind trick. We did it, and they're going to be like, hey, we're going to go with them at the same time, you know? And that's what I think exactly what Jose Suleiman and WBC are doing is by they're bullying in their way of getting what they want for Bernard Hopkins, which is that belt.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what it does for Bernard. I mean, he's at a stage where he's kind of beyond the belts. Obviously, he earned, that belt.
I think that's hilarious because we're talking about the WBC belt, which at one time or another, this guy did not care for belts. He wanted to be the ring championship fighter. That's what that was the whole thing. I don't even know if that exists anymore because the magazine has been bought from a promoter and all that. But I look at this. There's some significance to when a promoter buys, and this is what argument we've had numerous times, when a promoter buys a magazine. At one time, the ring belt was becoming one of the most recognizable and sought out belt to retrieve. Since Golden Boy has picked it up, we really don't hear a whole lot about that ring magazine anymore. I mean, that ring belt, you know.
Well, I think it's funny that the Richard Schaefer is like, well, we're going to talk to the CSAC, we're going to talk to the WBC, and we're going to talk to the ring belt ring magazine about getting our belt back. And I'm like, so you're going to send an inter-office email, or did you want
to? Yeah. He's going to send a memo to the front desk and then walk out of his office and pick it up and go, oh, this is interesting. I better report it.
We're going to get right on this.
We're going to get right on this. This guy has some nerve to email me right now.
Yeah. And if we're going to break the story, Lem. So, moving past it, I think what's interesting about it is that, And a disclaimer, Lem Satterfield's a hell of a reporter. I envied his ability to break stories. But Oscar, Make of War, Gomez, and Schaefer, quit patting each other on the back about breaking stories with your reporter. It's just silly. There's a precedent for this. You know, so, like I said, all hope is not lost, you know, for the people that think that Dawson should keep his belt. We should talk to at least one of them tonight, John Scully, the trainer. Gary Shaw might join us. I'm hoping that he does. It's just like we were talking earlier on the phone, and I said, "Look, there was like it was an NFC or AFC championship game in football, and I think it was like a Steelers game, and they scored a touchdown that wasn't a touchdown. It was like right on the line. The cameras quite couldn't get it, but it decided the game. And in this case, you know, they went back and." And the NFL does this all the time. They make a bad call. It could actually have changed a game. It's not usually that egregious, but it's a bad call. And they'll talk about it. If you watch NFL Network, the guy will come on and be like, yeah, we screwed up here, we screwed up there. Are you going to change the outcome of the game? No. The game has already happened. And I think, you know, with instant replay, those things can help. But a big part of why sports are so great is they're spontaneous.
Right.
They're live. They're unscripted, usually, in boxing. And however it goes, it goes. And I think we keep trying to eliminate human error so much that it takes all the fun out. That's the way the fight went. The ref is a very good ref. He's not a shitty ref with a bad track record. He's actually got an excellent track record. I'd put him up against anybody in the world, and I feel confident with my fighter's chances of not getting screwed over by Pat Russell. So it's not like it's one of those situations. I mean, you could say everybody screws up, but I don't think he did. Hopkins initiated that contact. Chad Dawson reacted. Was it an overreaction? That's a matter of interpretation. Hopkins had just been warned for the same infraction before. He'd been warned for using his head or attempting to.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been done headlocks. He's done this for years. We call it crafty, but it's dirty. And he set that tone, and Dawson had a response for it. He had an answer every time, and the old man fell down and got hurt. You think he
Absolutely.
Got shoved down? He got shouldered off? Whatever. He put himself in that situation. He suffered the consequences of his actions. And like David Greishman from Fight News printed that one of the rules is that if you get injured from while trying to foul somebody, but you end up getting injured, you lose on the TKO. That's exactly what happened.
And it
should stand. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It should stand.
Yeah. You know, the thing, too, is that Chad Dawson has been known to be a boring fighter. And for those 6 minutes, almost 6 minutes of him and Bernard dancing around and wrestling in a WWE style. That was the most animated I've seen Chad Dawson, man. I have to say, I mean, I had not seen a guy so, you know, full of fuel, you know, and I kind of like that Chad Dawson, you know. He drops the old man. He had Bernard Hopkins looking for change on the canvas, and he calls him a pussy. I mean, what more did we want?
That he gets mad at John Pascal's skinny jeans, you know, which is hilarious.
Yeah, that's – hey, you know, we got a great show for
for everybody. We got Roger Mayweather who's going to be calling in about, I would say, 5 more minutes. We have Antonio DeMarco. We also have John Scully, the trainer, the head trainer for Chad Dawson. And then we have Robert the Ghost Guerrero and then Eloy Perez. Hopefully we can get through this smoothly, but we're going to be pressing through time, you know, like we always do. But right now we're going to let in some fight fans because our phone lines are blowing up. I see a lot of people want to get on and talk to Chad Dawson. So let's get some fight fans and see what their thoughts and what they think about that happened Saturday night. Let's go with CT. You're on live right now, brother, on Leave It in the Ring.
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. I don't know what else to say about that fight. I just think, you know, Bernard was definitely looking for a way out in this fight.
Right.
I think from what I saw, I think Dawson was setting the pace. And to me, Hopkins looked very uncomfortable in the ring. I think, you know, it was illegal for what he was doing, trying to lean on Chad's neck, and he did it about 2 or 3 times before that.
And you did you notice something? I was even talking to you about this off the air, Gabe, and I talked to a few people, even when I watched it. But if you watch the replay, notice that he already knew what he was going to do with Chad. Throw one punch, then he literally got on a ballerina toe stance and then hovered over Chad. You know what I mean? And that's the whole take right there. And I'm like, you know, a tackle, yeah, to me it was finally a guy that was like, you know what, I'm not gonna stand here and do this with you. You know, I mean, let's go back with Eddie Chambers picking up, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, because Vladimir Klitschko does the same thing. He gets on your neck, he gets on your shoulders, tries to take out your legs. That's exactly what Bernard Hopkins was doing to Chad Dawson, and Chad was like, I'm not gonna have any of that, old man, and he threw him down, like if he didn't have a cane to hold him up.
Right. Almost, instead of doing like a David Haye, he does things that mostly normal fighters would probably do. Just nudges the guy off you. And I think Hopkins overplayed it and fell back and whatever, shoulders, whatever. But I think he just is trying to find a way out of the fight. He knew he couldn't handle this guy on that night. I think this is why he knew from the get-go, like, he didn't want Dawson because of his style. He couldn't cope with it. So, and he saw it in the ring that Dawson came to fight that night.
You know, and note with that, to note with that is that I think we all have to remind everybody, every listeners and ourselves, is that Bernard did not want this fight. This was a fight that he had to take on if he was going to get Sean Pascal again in a rematch. Go ahead, Gabe.
Yeah. Well, also, Jose Suleiman cites, I think he's citing the thing that Dan Raphael tweeted, the picture of Hopkins' diagnosis report. But, you know, Jose Suleiman in his letter says the California Hospital Medical Center report was also considered by the board, which states, and then he reads off the official statement of Hopkins' camp. It doesn't sound like he looked at x-rays. It doesn't sound like he investigated how bad that injury was. And this is my question. Is it possible that he had something like this coming into the fight? It's a common injury. It's the kind of injury that, you know, to the shoulder blades and the joints and all that kind of stuff. That happens with fighters. Robert Guerrero, actually, I saw him at the weigh-in, and he just had, you know, his shoulder injury, that his rotator cuff was damaged. But he told me that he had had that problem for a long time, and it finally came to a head. His shoulder finally gave out, you know.
Right.
So I'm curious, you know, I mean, Sergio Martinez just went into that Barker fight with a partial dislocation of his left elbow that he suffered 4 days before the fight. He went through it. Now, what happens if Barker tackles him or shoves him off and he lands on that elbow and he starts screaming, I can't fight any longer, I've hurt myself. But he had the injury going into the fight. He really wasn't hurt in that moment. He just kind of exasperated the injury. You know, you're rewarding theatrics. And this is the thing that gets me, and Steve and I always talk about this. You'll see a guy get a low blow. The ref is out of position to see it, just like Zab Judah Amir Khan. But the guy hits the ground, he starts acting, you know, hey, I've been hit low. And sometimes you'll see the ref, you know, like Pat Russell wisely says, I didn't see anything, I saw him shoulder him, guy fell, no harm, no foul. You know,
right.
No foul, some harm. But other times you'll see it, well, the ref didn't see it, but he just goes off of what the boxer is selling him and goes, all right, it was a low blow. And he just goes off of that. Sort of like Joe Cortez not looking at the action. And so he just goes, well, the guy's on the ground, I better start counting. What I liked about what Russell did was he ruled, on what he saw. And we all know there's only one ref, and there's only so many angles you can see things, you know, that happen in an instant from. And we entrust the fight to him. We entrust the rules to him. And he's allowed to interpret the rules. In the WBC rules, it says that, and the ABC rules, and in the referee's rules. It says that these rules are subject to interpretation by the referee. Why we're going to turn around and say, you know what, you were the one that was wrong, when really it was Hopkins that started this whole situation, just like it was Ortiz that started his whole situation. You reap what you sow.
Exactly. Yeah. CC, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. We got to let a few other folks on before we bring in Floyd Mayweather Sr., okay?
All right, thank you.
Let's get in.
Like
I know. Let's get Rob Riddler, brother. What's up? You're live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas for me, anyway, because I hate Hopkins.
What's your stock, dude?
That title is gonna be in Hopkins' stocking by Christmas. That's for sure. Like, oh, what is this? But no, I'm gonna be, you know. I didn't see any foul. You know, I didn't think it was a foul. I lately have not been a fan of Chad Dawson, but that night, you know, he definitely won my approval back of being one of the top dudes at that division. Even though Hopkins is kind of old, Pascal was close to knocking him out in the last rounds of that fight. I don't know, you know, but Dawson just came back. You know, and that post-fight press conference was hilarious. That was classic. I hope this Dawson stays around. You know,
I hope so too.
Dawson stays around. But Pascal needs to stop. Pascal needs to stop that recklessness. He knows he was on the way out of that fight. And I don't know what Hopkins is going to do. I don't know how he's going to talk. I just mainly want to see how he's going to talk his way out of this one.
Well, he's been awfully quiet, you know, ever since this happening on Saturday. You know, the press release from Golden Boy mentioning the injury. Just to for the convincing for everybody else, you know, and then some people, I believe somebody retained a picture or a copy of the medical record, but it still doesn't stop us for, you know, saying, hey, you were fouling and then you got hurt at it. So this is what you get. TKO. Rob, I'm going to put you on hold, brother. I got to get a few other folks on before I get on Mr. Floyd, okay?
All right, man.
You know, let me see. I don't know if we have time to squeeze anybody else in, but we're going to do it anyways before we call Mr. Floyd Mayweather Sr. So let's go with Henry the Hook. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Thanks, sir. My whole position on this was that the way Chad Dawson was given that title, there's no way to get a title. He literally picked Hopkins up with his back and slipped him to the floor. Now, I understand what you're saying. When Hopkins threw the right hand, that Dawson got down low enough to get under him. And when he got under him, I'm actually watching it right now, he actually got under him, put his left hand behind Hopkins' knee, and then raised himself up and then whipped him to the floor. Now,
he let go of his, so let go of his
the title.
Before he ever...
Hopkins got his title back. Politics aside, hating aside, the right hand is the WBC champion now. Period.
Well, here's the question, though. Should a man retain his belt because of that? Because you mentioned him cupping his leg, but he lets go of that leg before he ever throws him off of his shoulder.
Because he already had his leverage.
But hang on. And what's more is the leg that he grabbed was the leg that landed firmly on the canvas. It was the other leg that tripped that wasn't touched by anything. It was in the air because Hopkins overextended himself and ended up on dude's back and started leaning down on his neck.
Listen, he ended up on dude's back because dude got down low enough in order to do that. Did you see how low Chad got? Take a look.
But you're acting like it's the first time that's ever happened in a Hopkins fight. He always does that. He'd done it a minute before.
That's the problem right there. See, that's the problem right there. It's, you know, people have a problem with Hopkins, and that's not really what this is about. This
so
is about
like
how Chad Dawson
problem with
won
the
title. He didn't win it. He threw him into the floor.
But did Hopkins retain it? He retains it because he's good at acting? Or because he created a foul and got injured by it?
Who says he's good at acting? That's all speculation. Let's just talk facts. The fact is he was thrown to the floor. That's a fact.
He was shouldered off. It's a matter of opinion. There's a gray area there. His momentum carried
him forward. No. Watch the film. There's no gray area there.
It's my job to watch the film. I've watched it a million times. I've watched it in super slow motion.
Me.
And okay. Watch the fact that Hopkins left or right leg is no longer being held by Chad Dawson before he's shoulder.
Well, he's already got leverage with his back.
Well, here, Henry, here's a fact. Here's a fact. You know, you're absolutely right. Fact is that he shouldered him off and he fell. But there's another fact. The ref did warn Bernard Hopkins prior, before that happening, to get off his neck.
He also warned him in the same fight for using his head. I mean, how many times is he going to be allowed to foul before something has to happen? I mean, why is it okay for him to use dirty tactics, but if the other guy kind of answers a little back?
That's my point. It's not okay for anyone. It's certainly not okay to win a title that way, throwing somebody to the floor. That's the whole point.
But you're forgetting about the foul that started that foul. Which foul is worse? He actually created the situation and got injured by it. That's what the ref's ruling was. I agree with that. The leg that you're saying got cuffed is the leg that landed firmly planted on the ground. It was his fault for being on the other guy's back and putting himself in that position. Same way, you know, if Holyfield's head's forward and you come rushing in with your head, well, who caused the contact? The guy who already owned the space or the guy that entered it?
The bottom line is the title's in the choiceful hands now.
Yeah, now you've got to see what CSAC does.
More.
You know, hey Henry, thanks brother for calling in, brother. We got to get in our first guest.
Thank you, Henry.
Okay, let's get in our first guest. You know, everybody's got their opinion, man. They saw the fight the way they want to see it. Not saying you're wrong or right, but hey, the ruling's the ruling. We can't change it. That has nothing to do with us. You know, these are the rules. The referee, that's why we have a referee, the third man, the third eye, to really kind of show what's going on. In his opinion, we put that task for him to take care of. You know, and we hope them to do the best job they can do possible. Now, you know, granted that sometimes they foul up pretty bad. But this time around with Pat Russell, I'm sorry, I didn't see him really foul up at all.
Hello,
from the WBC.
Yeah, can I please speak to Mr. Floyd Mayweather Sr.?
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, Floyd? This is Dave Duenas with my co-host Gable Montoya on Leaving the Ring.
How you doing?
We're doing fantastic, brother. Hey, you know, first time you being here with us on Leaving the Ring Radio. We want to welcome you. You know, and I want to ask you, how's everything been with yourself? You know.
Everything has been great with me. I've been taking care of my business, staying on the case, running my place.
Well, let me ask you this, because the last time anybody really got a good full eye of you was on that 24/7 series with you and your son going at it neck to neck. Since then, how have things been for you and your son, Floyd Jr.?
Well, I don't know what's going on with him. I'm taking care of Floyd. That's number one. It's me. I take care of myself and I don't bother nobody else. So I guess he's taking care of himself too, I guess.
So you guys haven't reconciled yet then? You guys haven't communicated since that scene?
I guess you could say that because I haven't seen and don't know what he's doing. You know, it's all on him at the end of the day. Because I don't owe him no apologies or anything for anything because I haven't been nothing to it.
Absolutely, you know. Let me ask you this. What was your assessment of that night? Did you watch that fight between your son and Victor Ortiz? And what was your thought? I mean, a lot of commentators, a lot of writers really jumped down his throat about that legal sucker punch.
Again, even though me and my son had our difference, what I seen was what it was supposed to be. And that has nothing to do with the difference because my thing is, I call it what it is. I call what I see. And what happened is the referee gives you instructions. Before you first go in the ring, he tells you, protect yourself at all times. Them are the words that you should be listening at. The fatal words he tells you at the end. His last word will be, protect yourself at all times. That's what all of them tell you. So it ain't no word that you don't hear. There ain't no word that you don't know. The whole thing is that Victor Ortiz was, he know he did wrong when he did what he did with my son. And not only that was illegal what he did, And then you gotta look at it like this right here. My son, hold on just a second.
Go ahead.
My son, it was enough time where the refs could stop everything, but the refs already told him to go ahead on and fight. And LaFleur went ahead on. If you notice, LaFleur put his hands in the chest first. He put his hands in the chest first, then he hit him with a right hand, then he hit him with a hook. Simple.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems pretty simple.
I can't take nothing from LaFleur for that because it was no fouls or anything, you know. Everything was legal.
Yeah, I can agree with that. You know, it's how many times is the guy going to hug and kiss and apologize? I mean, he already did it 3 times. You know, it is what it is. But, Floyd, you know, you're the man that basically, you created Floyd in more ways than one. You know, you're his father, but also you instilled in him.
If you heard him, but that ain't taught me nothing. Guess what? Apple don't fall far from the tree.
Well, I'll get to that question a little later. what I'm curious about is you created this system, you know, this defensive system that he now uses and is maybe expanded on a little bit. Is there anything within what he does now that you see different than how you taught him?
I couldn't hear you, sir. You didn't sound right.
Is there anything that Floyd does now within the style that you taught him and the skills that you gave him that is different than what you taught him?
Everything is pretty much the same. We haven't really trained. We haven't trained pretty much in probably about 10 or 11 years. We probably haven't trained, but everything he's doing, he's doing the same thing as Daddy Tappas. That's all I see. He ain't doing nothing different whatsoever.
It's one of the most fascinating styles to watch, and what I like about it is his defense is also kind of offense, in that if you get in close, you're going to have to deal with forearms, you're going to have to deal with elbows.
You don't have to deal with elbows, you don't have to deal with arms, and none of that kind of stuff. All you have to do, all it is locking your shoulder, pissing yourself, and then when the guy gets through punching, you punch back. And most times, if you throw a punch, the punch is going to land on the guy. Mostly every time you throw it, because it's sort of no kind of, in a way, it's sort of no defense for that particular style. There's no kind of offense, I mean, for that type of style. You know, you can work off of it real easy. You can walk somebody down, and you can walk somebody down with the style. You can make a guy punch himself out. You can make him throw punches and set himself up to be hit. You know, it's an easy style to use, and I use the same style. And you want to know why that? Do you want to know why that he became champion and his daddy didn't?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. He became champion because I trained him to become champion, and I knew he was going to be champion. But not only that, I got shot with a 20-gauge shotgun in my leg. I was holding on the floor when I got shot. Floyd's uncle shot me in my leg with a 20-gauge shotgun. So my leg was blown off, and I had 5 surgeries. And I came back to be number one contender in the world. But I never did get the shot, though.
I'm curious, you know, we'll move off. And I didn't mean elbows the way that Bernard Hopkins means elbows. You know, not like throwing them to land them. But, I mean, when a guy comes in close, his guard will come up. And it's almost like, you know, like taking down a rebound in basketball. You're aggressive with your elbows, and guys are going to have to deal with it. It's not like you're using them illegally.
Totally different kind of style, sir. The style that LaFleur uses, you don't use no elbow. All you're using is your shoulder. You protect yourself with your shoulder. There's different things that you can do off of doing that. You can fire back with your right hand, then your other hand gonna come loose. Then you can go to the body, then go to the head, and you can start mixing your combinations up. But all with it's no using no arms or anything. It's all about protecting yourself. It's a shoulder roll, and you got to put your shoulder up at the right time. Your shoulder got to be connected to your chin. If your shoulder and your chin don't connect, then you might be on the floor somewhere.
We just kind of saw that with Oscar as he was early on trying to use the shoulder roll, and he wouldn't always connect the chin
to
the shoulder.
Oscar could do the shoulder roll, but he a lot of people don't know when to punch back though. Oscar could do it, roll his shoulder and protect himself, but he never did punch back. You know, he never did punch back. So I thought it was best that we change the shoulder roll for Oscar and let him keep his hands, hold his hands up. That's the way I thought it was the best way for him to do. And we did it that way, and it came out successful.
Speaking about Oscar, you know, ever since he has stopped working with them and he's went into retirement and he's kind of more or less really kind of focused on his company, but his dark secrets kind of came out. Did that surprise you, Floyd? I mean, did that surprise you to hear what was going on, or was this really at a hush-hush and you knew about all the stuff that came out finally?
Yeah, man, you know what they're about me, man? I'm a person like this right here. I really don't care about what Oscar did. I don't care whether he wore panties. I don't care if he wore stockings. I don't care if he wore lipstick, wigs, or anything. It don't matter to me. Whether he wore a bra or whatever, none of that stuff means nothing to me. My thing is, I had a good role with Oscar, and he was nice to me, and that's all that matters to me.
Actually, I did have one question about Oscar before we get off that subject, Dave, just to follow up what you said.
Yeah.
When Floyd fought Oscar fought Floyd, and you weren't in the corner for the first time in years, do you think that was more about not having you train somebody to fight your son, or was it Oscar making a power play for Pacquiao by hiring Freddie Roach?
Well, no, it wasn't about Freddie Roach. Oscar De La Hoya called the same guy he would always call when he was fighting, and that was me. Oscar called me first. I turned Oscar down, and I went to England and trained Ricky Hatton to fight Paulie Maginagi. I went
right.
to England to do that, and I decided not to train Oscar because my thing was is, Oscar was paying me good for an average fighter, I mean for an average trainer, but I'm the best trainer, so how in the world are you going to pay me less than a lot of other trainers getting? He gave me $300,000 or he gave me $250,000. That was it, but he was making $30 million though. You know, but he was still winning
yeah.
with me all the time. So I'm just saying, my thing was that was my reason for not going along with Oscar, and that's how Freddie Roach got a chance to get in there and train Oscar for it. And Oscar got in there and trained with Freddie Roach. Then now he know.
Fair enough.
By not being with the motivator, innovator, creator, he found out what time of day it was. It was a nightmare for him.
So you don't think that after that, because right after that is when, you know, Pacquiao tried to sign with Oscar and it was that whole debacle. You don't think that was
not that Pacquiao tried to sign it with Oscar. Pacquiao is with Oscar as well. He's with,
right.
he's with Bob Arum, and also Oscar De La Hoya got a piece of Pacquiao as well.
That's what I'm saying. It happened right around that time, and I always wondered if you know, he went from yourself, who has a very particular style that was really working for Oscar, to a guy that has a style not like yours at all in Freddie Roach, but he did have a pipeline to Pacquiao. That's why I was curious if you thought maybe he was skinning Roach so he
Pacquiao
could get
ain't
Pacquiao.
Got no style. Pacquiao has no style, man. You know what I mean? Just...
Hey, well, let's talk a little bit about that Pacquiao style, because if I remember a long time ago when your son was put in with a southpaw, you were in disagreement with your brother about doing that. Has that changed for you? I mean, because Floyd has been fighting some southpaws and look, you know, good against them. Has your
my son right now do what the hell he want to do. I'm just telling you that because, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, he's in his own world now, but when he was fighting with me, I preferred him not to fight southpaw at that particular time because he was still green. You know, he was still, even though he fight right-handed and stuff, he was still green about southpaw. I never even liked training southpaw.
Mm-hmm.
I train southpaw now. I train southpaw now. Train him very good. But, you know, I made Chad Dawson a champion. One that just fought Hopkins. I made him a champion. And, you know, the thing is that I told his promoter that I didn't want to train Chad Dawson because I don't like training softballs. I don't like them, period. So he kept on begging me and asking me over and over and over. I said, yeah, man, I train. Because he thought that he seen me what I do with the right-handers that I can do with the softball. I went ahead on and I became, I never did want to even do it. I never even tried to do it too much. But when I tried it, I kept working it, and it worked out good. He won a world title, and I'm training softball today.
What do you think about what happened with Chad Dawson and Bernard Hopkins this past Saturday, you know, with the TKO over Bernard and how he was fouling, and then Chad finally fouled him back?
I don't remember seeing Hopkins fouling nobody. I don't remember seeing that. I mean, you might have seen something. You got to tell me where I can...
Well, the ref, you know, warned him about jumping on Chad Dawson's neck, you know, when he would throw a right hand, he would lean on top of him, and basically...
Well, Hopkins did something.
Yeah.
That's
what he was warned for by Pat Russell, was leaning on Chad Dawson's neck.
Okay, I remember hearing something like that. But the thing is with me is my honest opinion and my honest belief is that I thought that at first myself, I thought that Bernard Hopkins was faking. That's what I thought. And I don't know today, but that's what I thought, and that's what I believed in my heart. But on another token, they say that something else wrong with his arm. And I gotta go along with that, though. I gotta go along with what they said, if something was wrong with his arm. But from what I seen, I didn't see nothing. I was looking right at the fight. I didn't see his arm. I didn't see his shoulder hit the rope. I don't think that could have been in anyway, but his shoulder hit the rope. Then they said that maybe when his elbow went down, I guess some kind of muscle disconnected up in the top of his shoulder.
Right.
And I don't really, you know, I mean, that's what they said. I don't know, but that's what they said. So I got to go along with what they said. Because I don't know. I mean, it looked like it was fake to me, but hey, I the one to call that right there because...
You're not alone, though. Floyd, you're not alone about that. I think a lot of people feel the exact same way that Bernard Hopkins faked it. You know, he did some Oscar nominated acting there, you know?
Gabe, well, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I thought that, but, you know, I might get me wrong, though. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to speak against the doctor because that's what they do and they feel. And if they said that, I don't know what they said, but if they said that, then I have to go along with that. But I'm just telling you the way it looked to me. It didn't look that way to me, but, hey.
Right.
So, if they say the doctor said it, I have to go along with it.
Absolutely.
You brought up, this is Gabriel again, the past history of when you were shot with a 12-gauge in the leg and then you also, you went away, you were incarcerated after that. One of the guys that was responsible for taking care of Floyd was Don Hale. I've always wondered about that relationship and your take on Don. What are your thoughts
on Don? Well, Don Hale wasn't nobody. Don Hale was nobody but somebody from Hale. That's what he was. Well, the damn devil. I put my son upon the devil. That's what I did.
And that was the guy that tried to sign him to a management contract and then later tried to sue.
Oh, man, he did. Man, he told so many lies, man, just telling my son how much money he gave me when he was in prison.
He didn't do none of that.
I ain't going to say that he didn't give me something, man. Nothing like what he said, though. I'm just saying, you know, he might have gave me, since I was in that thing, he might have gave me $300-$400 at the most. But as far as him giving me something big, trust me and believe me, I could have gave him that back as soon as I got out. But it wasn't no thing about that anyway. He gained more than that off of my son anyway.
Are he and Floyd still friends?
No, I doubt it. I never heard no more about him, Terry.
Oh, okay.
You shouldn't hear no more about him because he was in there for the wrong things.
Right.
And the thing is, in there, most of them in there for the wrong things. You know what I mean? And if my son don't do the right thing, you know, the wrong thing is going to come his way.
Well, Floyd, I want to thank you again for coming on with us on Leaving the Ring. And, we wish you for your continuing for your success. And we'll catch up with you to find out what else is going on and down the line. And hopefully everything's doing well for you, brother.
Everything's going great for me.
All right, you take care.
All right, take care of them.
All right.
You too.
Well, there you go. Floyd Joy Mayweather Sr. on Leaving the Ring, talking to us. The thing about our listeners, man, is they can be brutal. And I'm trying to not laugh. And, I'm going to, you know, I got to let it all out now. people say. Where's the translator, man? I mean, come on, man.
I could understand. I mean, there was a couple points where I was like, huh? But it was usually when he was trying to formulate his ideas, you know?
Exactly.
I think I kind of hit a bit of a nerve asking about Don Hale. He didn't seem too happy to talk about him, but I don't know.
No.
I found that pause interesting when I said if they're still friends or not. And that really long pause was kind of interesting to me, especially if you know why I was asking those questions, which probably nobody that's listening to the radio does. So it'll be printed at a later date.
Yeah, definitely. I there were some things that I did like what he had to say. And, I was a little surprised that he said that he thought that Bernard Hopkins was faking the injury.
Yeah. I was a little surprised, too. But, you know, this one, you know what's interesting is, you know, the racial aspect of boxing is always fun to watch. And when you have two black guys fighting, you know, like if you have like a Puerto Rican and a Mexican and something like this happened, you'd have to look at the race of the person or who they normally go with in order to kind of gauge where they're coming from. when you have two African-American fighters, you know, you're not really seeing any sort of racial bias here. You're either seeing Hopkins fans, you're seeing Dawson fans, or you're seeing boxing fans that want to see justice. I think it's very interesting. And both sides, you know, make very strong cases. You can make a case that, Dawson did it on purpose and was too, you know, kind of like Ortiz. It was like a young guy trying out the fouls and didn't quite do it as fly as you should have. But
I'm still,
you know,
reading what people are saying about Floyd Mayweather Sr. And,
come on, people.
You know, maybe I should drink a little bit by Rebecca to understand what he's saying. People saying that he sounds like me when I'm drunk. Be quiet.
Like me last Thursday night.
Yeah. Hey, can we patch in Z so she can be our translator so when we get Antonio DeMarco, who's been waiting patiently, so we can speak to him?
Let me see if I can. I didn't know we needed a translator.
I thought I told you. I might have slipped my mind.
I think it slipped your mind. Yeah. One second.
Anyways, while you're doing that, let me patch in some fight fans that have been waiting patiently. They want to talk about Bernard Hopkins and Dawson. So let's go with Rob Rigo. You're on live right now and leaving the ring, brother.
Oh, man, what a crazy night. Crazy night. Frustrating to watch, man. I mean, as just a boxing head watching, you know, it's frustrating to watch, and what's even more frustrating to watch is that, you know, they're already talking about the rematch with Pascal, you know, that nervous guy, and, you know, Cloud's not in the mix. You know, I just want to see these guys get it on with, get Cloud getting in the mix, and, you know, I don't blame Dawson for what he did. I mean, he set the tone saying, hey, I'm not going to play your games, kind of threw him down. I'll do the same thing, and just, I don't know if Hopkins thought that maybe the referee was going to, not stop the fight, but kind of like, you know, side with him, give him some time, and then kind of, you know, take his side like he usually does, you know, with usually play to the refs. But, yeah, it's just frustrating overall. But hopefully Cloud gets in there.
You know, the thing, too, with Cloud is he's a really throwback kind of guy, come forward, really strong, throws big punches, et cetera. And he's been waiting patiently, you know. He's really been waiting patiently to get his shot. And it almost went down like a breaking point for him on Twitter. And, you know, and I wrote an article for the magazine about what Twitter's really kind of done for fighters. To me, it's obviously a social network that you can get closer to fans as a market ability to do. But, but at the same time, it has also left bad taste for fans when they read some of the things that fighters have said, you know, and Cloud being one of those is that you're watching. I mean, me personally, I don't mind it because I do like when fighters, you know, talk their way into a fight. It's been the turnoff when you see fighters talk their way into a fight and guess what? Don't show up to the fight. So, you know, Cloud is doing exactly what he should do, which is, you know, this is the millennium. And in the millennium, you do things a lot more different than when the way you did it back in the 80s. In the 80s, you went to the press conference, and you called out the fighter, and you know you stood next to him at the podium, and you know you said, hey, I just want to fight you, et cetera, et cetera. So now you have things a little bit different. Now things are just a lot quicker and a lot faster. But a rematch right now, if anything, things need to be figured out before anything are talked about a rematch, because like I said, you know, you got a lot of fans that are kind of split in between what has happened on Saturday night. Like I said, you know, I'm not knocking anybody else's opinion or what they thought, what they saw. You know, I mean, if you didn't think that Bernard Hopkins fouled and you think that, you know, that was a bad call, then hey, that's what you saw. But I'm telling you what I saw. I didn't think it was a bad call from Pat Russell. I thought it was the right call, you know, a TKO, because the fact that he had warned B-Hop prior to when he had did it again. Now, did I say that it was right for Chad Dawson? No, I just think that he just kind of got fed up with it and was like, you know what? This guy's been in my face for the past couple of weeks that it was like almost he lit up a match and it's just the fire finally caught on and it exploded. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I love the new Chad. I love the new Chad, though. I mean, that's one good thing out of it. A Chad, stay the same. Keep that fire. It seems like he's the walking giant. But thanks, guys.
Hey, thank
you,
brother.
I agree.
What was that now, Gabe?
Okay. We have our translator, Z.
All right. Let's see now if we can get our fighter on with us on Leaving the Ring, and hopefully we can. Okay. That's not the right number. So let me
Damn it, Dave.
Hi, Z. Thank you, too, for coming on such late notice.
No problem. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing fantastic. Besides being teased by everybody, saying that I sound like Mr. Floyd Mayweather Sr. when I drink, which is not true. It's not true. I sound more like Luis Miguel when I'm drinking.
I have to hear that then.
Let's see if we can get Antonio. And then we have, we have John Scully's schedule.
I have the same problem. I sound like Maria Callas when I drank too.
Oh.
I sound like Jose Suleiman. That don't make any sense at all.
Oh, wow. Let's see. And as soon as we get on DeMarco, we will patch in some of the fight fans and hear their take, you know. Because so far.
Keep filibustering, Dave.
What was that?
So keep filibustering. Just keep filling until we get him on. Actually, I found the stuff with Floyd Sr. Talking about the offense that he's installed in Floyd's defense. It's kind of interesting stuff.
Bueno, ¿puedo hablar con Antonio? ¿Darmaco?
Sí, yo soy, mucho gusto.
Antonio, ¿qué pasó? ¿Cómo estás?
Bien, gracias a Dios, bien.
¿Cómo está el ojo?
Voy a ir a la camioneta, ¿eh? Porque bien, gracias a Dios, todo bien. No, ya no traigo nada, traigo el puro moretón nada más.
Órale, mira, mi nombre es David Dueñez, mi compas nombre es Gabriel Montoya, somos de la radio Living in the Ring. Vamos a hablar en inglés, porque los dos, nosotros somos pochos. Pero sí, ella va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Okay.
Okay, Z, just welcome him to the show first off and let him know that we appreciate him taking the time. I know he's trying to rest since his great, phenomenal fight with Jorge Linares.
Hola, Antonio. Muchas gracias, primero que nada, por el, estar en el show. Sabemos todos que estás descansando luego de la pelea espectacular que tuviste con Linares. Y bueno, te agradecemos el tiempo que nos dedicas para hablar con nosotros.
Ah, muchísimas gracias igualmente. Muchas gracias a ustedes por el tiempo. Muchísimas gracias.
Now, go ahead, Gabriel, and start it off, brother.
Welcome to the show. What tremendous, tremendous fight. I'm curious, you know, what was your game plan going into the fight? Did you know that you were going to have to go through fire in order to pull out this win?
Gabriel Montoya te felicita también por la pelea tremenda que tuviste y quiere saber si hubo algún plan de pelea que tenía ya previo a ir al combate. Si sabías ya que ibas a tener que básicamente caminar a través de fuego para poder conseguir la victoria.
Muchísimas gracias, Dire, por la felicitación, primero que nada. Muchas gracias. Sí, sabíamos que era una pelea difícil y sabíamos que era una pelea así exactamente como pasó, dura. Y sabíamos que a Linares le íbamos a ganar pudiéndolo frenar poquito en los últimos rounds. Gracias a Dios se dieron las cosas y salió todo bien. Estoy súper contento porque creo que fue una gran pelea. Creo que Linares hizo su trabajo y yo también hice mi trabajo. Pero al final, pues, fue mi noche. Mañana puede ser la de Linares.
Okay. He says, first of all, he wants to thank you for, you know, congratulating him on the fight. And he says that they knew that it was going to be a very difficult fight. And it happened exactly like they envisioned it. It was a very tough fight. They knew that they were going to beat Linares the way they did, trying to slow him down a little bit during the later rounds. And thank God, you know, the plan worked as they thought it would. But he said that he's very happy because it was a great fight. He says he gave his all. Linares also gave his all. To, you know, put on a great fight, and it was just his night, same as tomorrow it could be Linares' night.
What was it that you were worried about most with him? Was it his speed? Was it his technical proficiency? What?
The ¿Qué era lo más que te preocupaba de él? ¿Su velocidad o lo sólido que era técnicamente? ¿Qué aspecto te preocupaba más?
Realmente, de Linares, no nos enfocamos tanto en la preparación esa, te voy a ser sincero, no nos enfocamos tanto en Linares. Nos enfocamos más bien en nuestro trabajo, porque sabíamos que Linares es un gran y un excelente peleador. Para mí, te soy sincero, es uno de los mejores peleadores ahorita técnicamente en este momento. Para mí es un excelente peleador que hasta a mí me encanta verlo pelear.
Okay. César, no, to be honest with you, we didn't focus in this training camp so much on Linares, but more on our work. We knew that Linares was a great boxer, excellent fighter, and to be honest, to me, he is one of the best technical boxers out there and one that I personally enjoy watching a lot.
You know, when I was watching the fight there, automatically HBO was praising Linares, you know, about his boxing skills, you know. But I don't know if he had a chance to watch the replay. Does it kind of make him laugh that I think some commentators and some folks have forgotten how much of a slow starter a lot of Mexican fighters are, how, you know, it takes 3 to 4 rounds for them to start going. And was that the game plan, was to really kind of weather or see what were the openings to take over in Linares?
Él dice que viendo la pelea, lo primero que notó fue que los comentaristas alabaron muchísimo a Linares desde el principio. Y él dice que si al verla no sabe si ha visto otra vez la pelea, pero quiere saber si no, qué impresión tiene, si no te da un poco de pues risa el que muchas veces los comentaristas parece que se olvidan de que los boxeadores mexicanos empiezan a tomar control de la pelea un poco tarde, usualmente le toma 3 o 4 asaltos, y quiere saber si ese fue precisamente el plan, esperar un poco y ver dónde aparecían los huecos donde se pudieran pues explotar.
Realmente dile que nos favoreció que hablaran mucho de Linares. Nos hicieron que se presionara más él. Le dieron mucho más responsabilidad a Linares. Todas las personas, su promotor, sus entrenadores, su esquina maravillosa que tiene, la gente de HBO. Imagínate, todos estaban hablando muy bien de Linares y eso nos favoreció porque hicieron que Linares se presionara, y nosotros, como te digo, hicimos nuestro trabajo. Duré 3 meses preparándome junto con mi equipo de trabajo y mis compañeros de gimnasio, 3 meses de arduo entrenamiento, y gracias a Dios, Dios nos compensó. Yo siempre dije y estuve seguro, si es cierto que las peleas se ganan en el gimnasio, yo ya gané, le decía a don Rómulo, le estoy echando muchas ganas. Y gracias a Dios se dieron las cosas.
Okay. Says, no, I think that favored us because, I mean, the fact that they talked so much about Linares, because that made, that put a lot of pressure on Linares. The fact that it put a lot of responsibility on him. The fact that everybody, their promoters, the trainers, his corner, which is a wonderful corner, the people at HBO, everybody was talking so well about Linares. That favored us, the fact that pressure was put on him. We simply did our job. I spent 3 months preparing with my team, working hard in the gym. Those were 3 very tough months of work, but you know, it was all worth it. And I always said to Romulo, if it's true that fights are won in the gym, then I already won this one. And you know, thanks to God, that's how it happened.
You seem to find that uppercut probably around round five or six. Was that a punch that you knew would work and it just took that long to find the opening, or was it something you discovered in the course of the fight?
Tuviste éxito con el uppercut en los asaltos más o menos 5 o 6. ¿Eso era algo que ya sabías de antemano o fue algo que descubriste según fue transcurriendo el combate?
No, era algo que estuvimos trabajando los uppercuts, porque Linares no se esperaba que yo tirara o entrara con combinaciones de uppercuts, porque él siempre lo dijo, yo nada más de demarco, tengo que cuidarme de su jab y su remate de izquierda, dice. Y no se esperaba los upper, y esperé el preciso momento para hacerlo, y cuando me dio la oportunidad de hacerlo, fue cuando pude meter mis golpes.
He says, no, we were working on that. We were working on the uppers because we knew that Linares wasn't expecting that. He wasn't expecting me to come in with combinations and including the upper. He always said that the only things that he needed to worry about me were the jab and the counter with the left. But he wasn't expecting an upper. So I just waited for the precise moment to throw it. And when he gave me the opportunity, I did.
I got kind of a two-part question for him really quick. The one thing that I noticed in that fight is that in those punches, I got to ask, because the one thing that I thought was how well his face was going to hold up to Linares' punches. But it ended up being the opposite. It was Linares' face that kind of fell apart. And after watching that fight, I noticed Linares really didn't sit on those punches. Am I right about that? Because they look more like pity-pat Olympic-style punches rather than flat-footed punches where it looked like it would cause damage to DeMarco.
Él dice que una de las cosas por las cuales él se preocupaba sobre ti en este combate era cuán bien tu rostro iba a poder aguantar los golpes de Linares. Sucedió todo lo contrario, fue el rostro de Linares el que no pudo aguantar tus golpes. Y él quiere saber si, aparte de tu comentario sobre eso, si te pareció a ti también, como a él le pareció, que los golpes de Linares ya para finales de la pelea eran más tipo como golpes de boxeo olímpico en lugar de ser golpes bien sentados que vinieran con mucha potencia hacia ti, digamos.
Realmente Linares sí pega, sí pega, él pega duro, pero los primeros rounds lo hizo, pero yo dije que nada me iba a detener, que nada ni nadie me iba a detener. Y créeme que no, ni los golpes de Linares, ni los golpes de nadie, ese día iba a impedir que yo cumpliera mi sueño de ser campeón del mundo. Yo tenía esas ganas, tengo esa hambre de ser alguien en el boxeo. Y los primeros rounds lo hizo golpeando más fuerte. Y acertaste, como tú lo dices, los últimos rounds, él también se fue minando, se fue cansando y soltaba golpes, más bien era de pura rapidez, conectarme y salir. Pero realmente ya después ya no me hizo nada de daño.
Okay. He says, no, Linares does punch, he can punch and he hits hard. In the first round, he did so, but I just said that nothing and no one would stop me. Not the punches of Linares, not the punches of anyone would stop me from achieving my dream of becoming a world champion. I have that hunger of being someone in boxing. And yes, during the first round, like you said, Linares hit me very hard. But during the later rounds, the punches were not so hard, but more like punches coming out of pure speed, just to, you know, connect and get out very quickly. And he didn't hurt me that much during those later rounds.
And my last question for him is, this is actually the two-part question here, is that Tijuana has always been known for a very rich town of fighters, but it's thinned out. And a lot of folks were looking at this as a crossroad fight for you. But now you're back on top. Now you got the doors have opened up for you. One is Linares is saying he wants a rematch, but then there's other potential fights out there at 135 for himself. We can talk about Bam Bam Rios to John Molina. Out of those three guys, which one does he think that would keep him on top of Tijuana, or does he look at maybe facing Eric Morales in Tijuana, where some fans are already kind of voicing that they would love to see? They think that would be huge for it to be in Tijuana, Mexico.
Mucha gente dice que, bueno, conoce que Tijuana es una ciudad muy rica en cuanto a talento de boxeadores. Y bueno, es tu caso y a ti se te han abierto mucho las puertas luego de esta pelea. Hay varias opciones, una de ellas es la revancha contra Linares, que bueno, ya él dice que le gustaría. Otras alternativas son Bam Bam Rios y John Molina. Él quiere saber si hay alguno de los tres que tú prefieras, o si para pelear en, digamos, en que te establezca, ¿no?, definitivamente como al tope de los boxeadores en Tijuana, o si prefieres una pelea, digamos, con Eric Morales en Tijuana, que es otra cosa que la fanaticada ha dicho que le gustaría.
Hello? Did we lose him? Oh, I think we lost him. Let me call him back in.
Damn it, Dave.
Okay.
He's fired. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. It says that he, it says he's out of range.
Uh-oh.
Well, unlike the fight, he's out of range. He's perfectly in range against Linares.
Yeah.
Well,
damn it. I don't know what happened.
You and your questions. I had a good question with you. Damn it. Oh, well.
Yep, it's not going to let us in. Gee.
He's in Mexico?
He's in Mexico. So he probably got out of range. Yeah, it's not going through. So we apologize for all the listeners that were listening to Antonio DeMarco. Hopefully, maybe we can get him a little later. We'll have to wait for him to get signal again to get him back on. If not, we'll try to get him back on for next week. But for right now, this is what we were able to receive from him.
Well, way it goes. You can pretend to be Lenora or DeMarco, and I'll just ask you questions. How about that?
Yeah.
See, you got the laugh down and everything.
Yep. Well, damn it.
Well,
all right.
Well, you know what? I got John Scully waiting. He wants me to give him a call.
Okay, why don't we do that? Let's get John Scully on and talk to him a little bit about what he thought and what he saw on the on Saturday night.
All right, I'll be right back.
Again, we apologize, you know, but he is in Mexico and he was resting, and we did lose him. But see what happens. See if we can get him back on. If not, then we'll have to try to do it again with him. I would love to hear what his thoughts about maybe fighting Bam Bam Rios, Brandon, or John Molina, who's left without an opponent, or even Eric Morales. And then same thing, he also has Robert Ghost Guerrero out there. You have Madonna, Matisse's. There's a lot of great names. You know, DeMarco has just got himself back in the mix, man, and well-deserved. Great fight, great, great fight, you know. And I'm eating crow because I did pick Linares to win that fight. But at the same time, I said don't count him out. Kid's a tough kid, you know, and I know a lot of folks were looking at it. It's going to be a crossroad fight for him, but geez, didn't he cross the road. He paved the road when he crossed it.
He just, detoured Linares back to rebuilding, though. Well, I'm back here with Iceman John Scully, trainer of Chad Dawson. They've got the win. They don't have the belt now because of Jose Suleiman's usual corrupt tactics. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Where to start? I guess just take us back into the before the fight, and you seemed very confident that no matter what kind of tactics Hopkins used, you guys had an answer for it. So I have to ask you, did you guys work on the shoulder move or any of those types of things? And what did you see in the big moment in the fight?
Well, I mean, we didn't like work on that exact move or anything exactly, but you know, Chad definitely works with his strength coach. And the thing that I told Chad frequently, and I know this for sure, like Hopkins thought he was soft, and I mean, you know, he even mentioned something at the weigh-in about the no gangsters come from Hartford, you know, whatever that means. But I know he had an impression in his head that Chad was a soft kind of kid because, you know, sometimes people mistake the quietness for weakness. And I knew that wasn't – I've known Chad since he was a little kid. I mean, soft is not him. And, you know, he's just not a big talker and everything. But when it comes down to it, he's not soft. And I thought he showed that in the first Glenn Johnson fight. He proved it. But in any event, so we basically had the mindset where – you know, we weren't going to put up with the intimidation. And I think, for me, the moment when Hopkins really knew he was in a real fight was at one point he tried to headbutt Chad, clearly, in the first round. He tried to headbutt him. And however it ended up, I mean, you know, things happen so fast. But I just remember a moment when Chad had him up against the ropes, and I don't know if Hopkins tried to manhandle him or whatever it was, but Chad took his forearm and he put it right in Bernard's throat. And he didn't just do that, but he did it with a look on his face like now what? Like he was looking right in Bernard's face. And I think, honestly, at that moment, I think Bernard realized he misunderestimated this kid. You know, but then whatever happened, they got, you know, tangled up. And really, Bernard was the cause of that, clearly. I mean, if you watch the tape, if anything, and I've said this, and people have argued with me, and, you know, they don't understand. They think that when you're a great fighter like Bernard that everything you do is perfect. And that's not the case. He threw the right hand, he missed it, and he literally catapulted his right leg forward, and which is terrible punching technique, by the way. He catapulted himself forward, and he ended up draped over Chad, and Chad, you know, stood up, and I think, you know, probably in his eagerness to show Bernard that he wasn't going to let Bernard manhandle him, on the spur of the moment, he pushed him. And, you know, I thought he pushed him hard enough to get him off. I thought Bernard kind of fell a little bit harder than the push warranted. You know, maybe, you know, he looked like he got shot out of a cannon, really. You know, I thought that was a little excessive. But, you know, so it is what it is. That's how it happened.
What do you think about the fans that? I'm sorry, but what do you think? Yeah. We even had a call a little while ago, and he was like, you know, Chad was bending his knees a little lower than should, and that was the cause of Bernard kind of falling on top of him, you know, kind of going right over him, and that one there. But the other one is that how can you guys parade around claiming you're a champion the way the turnout turned out to be, the TKO on a foul? That's their thought. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing, let me just say this. You know, Chad ducked the right hand. Now, if I was training a 10-year-old kid and he threw the right hand and he threw his body forward, I would stop him and say, look, that's wrong. That's not how you box. You have to throw the right hand. Like, look at Roy Jones. When Roy Jones throws his right hand, he's always in a position to let the left hook fly off of that. Like, they string together like a puzzle. With the way Hopkins threw his right hand, there was no left hook behind it because he was, you know, catapulted forward. So again, his form was very bad. You know, and again, I wasn't, after the fight, I certainly wasn't parading around. If you saw the fight, or I don't know if I was visible on TV or if you were at the fight, but I was very calm. And, you know, I take things as they are. You know, I don't get overly excited. You know, I think Chad was caught up in the moment, and I think it wasn't even so much the title. It was just there was a bit of bad blood, I think, between him and Bernard, and it was more a case of him just trying to stick it to Bernard. You know what I mean? It wasn't so much the win. It was just the winning over Bernard. I think in those moments, Chad didn't care how he won. as much as he just wanted to win. And when they told him he won, he got excited. And fighters always, in the interviews after, I always tell people the worst time and the best time to interview a fighter is immediately after the fight, because A, they'll be pretty honest, and B, they'll say things just come out of them that maybe if they had time to think about it, they wouldn't say.
Right.
So, you know, I think you could give Chad a little pass there. I mean, you know, you're talking about months and months of emotion built up, and then it just blasted out of them in the span of 30 seconds.
Well, that and it was kind of all that pent-up stuff didn't get to be released. The fight was over.
He was so eager. You know, you're right. He was so eager to fight, and, I mean, he really trained hard. And you got to understand, like, these guys, you know, a lot of boxing fans think they just show up and they get emotional that night. But, I mean, you know, these guys are thinking about the fight months in advance. I mean, we were in training camp 7 weeks, and, you know, he's going to bed early every night. He's getting up every morning. We're running. We're doing strength training. We're working, you know, on technique. And, you know, that's a lot to ask of a human being to suppress that when the moment comes, especially when it's so unexpected. It's not like the bell rang to end the 12th round, and then we went to our corners and we waited for the decision. I mean, this was literally just a spur of the moment. Things just jumped off, and it just, you know, everybody, you know, I have enough experience where I'm able to calm myself, but, you know, I could see if I was younger, I might have done the same type of thing, you know, as a trainer, I might have get really excited, but, you know, I'm pretty calm under those circumstances, luckily.
Don't you find it interesting that, you know, obviously boxing fans are pretty knowledgeable people. Most sports fans are knowledgeable about their sport. But I've heard this rule about don't duck below the opponent's waist probably more this week than I've heard it ever in my history covering the sport or being a fan. I've heard it maybe once or twice. But suddenly everybody's going crazy. I mean, how many times have you about to fight? I said, oh, it keeps ducking below the other opponent's waist. You know, call foul, take a point. It just doesn't happen. I think we have the benefit of that instant replay, and we can slow it down frame by frame and say, look, he grabs his left leg, and then he releases it. Then he begins the shoulder. Don't you think at some point we have to say, we put this in the ref's hands. We all trust him. He's a good ref. And we all go into the deal knowing that there's only so many angles he can watch at one time, but we trust him and leave it at that. I mean, does it set a bad precedent to take the belt away and then change the ruling?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I tell you what, I would never in my life want to be a referee. You know, people bypass the referee. They watch the fights and they just take it for granted that the referee sees everything and he's standing right there. He's literally a foot away. Nobody in the world is closer to those two guys than him. Me personally, I would never in this lifetime for any kind of money, I wouldn't be a referee. It's just too much. Talk about pressure. I mean, imagine the pressure that referee must have felt in those moments. Like he's under the gun. I mean, everything is like it's like being an umpire in the World Series and it's the ninth inning and it's 3-2 and the bases are loaded and it's 3-2 count, two outs, and you got to decide what this next pitch is, and you blink. You know what I mean? You blink when the pitch goes, and you got to make up your mind. I mean, that's a terrible position to be in. So, you know, I certainly don't envy the referee, and I know he has to make a spur of the moment count and a spur of the moment call. And you know, if anything, when I talked to the referee before the fight, I was very confident. Like, he seemed, just listening to him talk at the rules meeting and everything, he seemed to me to be a very on the ball referee, a very sharp guy. You know, so I don't know what he saw or how he saw it, and again, being in the ring and seeing things isn't the same as being in the audience and being out in TV land and watching it. It's a completely different view.
It's something that interests me that Pat Russell said in the pre-fight instructions to Hopkins, and I imagine he said the same thing to you guys. But you know, they show different points in the rules reading before the fight on HBO. But he said to Hopkins, if you get knocked down, I want you up at 8. I want you to walk to me and show me that you're okay. And then he kind of paused and he said, as a general rule, I want you to convince me at all times that you were okay. Now, Hopkins didn't do that. He said that he was injured. If there's no foul called, that's a TKO. If to me, at least anyways, I mean, to me, there was a foul. It was Hopkins' beginning one. He got shouldered off. He fell in the course of his foul and was injured, and so that's a TKO. Is that what you understand, how Pat Russell was ruling?
Oh, you know, he came into our dressing room. He said the same exact thing. So I was there when he said it. So he said it to both of us, and that's actually a key point. I'll say this much: a fighter is on instincts. You know what I mean? Like you punch a guy, he punches you back. That's just human instinct. And for me, and I know I was this way in my career, and it actually saved me on two different occasions, where I made up my mind. Like I always said to myself, if anything ever happens, if there's any indication that I'm in trouble, I'm going to make sure the entire world knows that I'm okay. And I had one fight when I was cut really bad, and it was really bad. I'm surprised they actually didn't stop it. Rudy Battle, really, really well-known referee, he told me after one of the rounds that he was going to stop it if the cuts got any worse. And I literally threatened his life in the corner. And I was serious. I told him I was going to kill him, and I was all, you know, I really made such a dramatic thing that he actually let the fight go. And afterwards, he commended me for, you know, having a lot of heart and everything. But I realize now the reason he let me go is because he figured if I'm that angry and I'm telling him I'm going to kill him if he stops the fight, then I must really want to fight. And that a similar thing happened in another fight in my career. So Bernard certainly didn't show, like, hey, doc, you know, hey, ref, you know, I'm ready to fight. I don't care what happened. You know, because when a fighter's in trouble like that, if he really wants to fight, he needs to get almost unrealistic. You know, like if I had, say I broke my leg in a fight, and it's obvious I can't even walk, but I'd be like, ref, I can do it, I can do it. And, you know, obviously you've got to stop the fight, but you need to show that if you really want to fight. And, you know, you can't just let things fall where they may, because that's giving the referee an indication that, well, he doesn't seem to care that much if I stop the fight. You know, so
right.
I honestly don't think Bernard certainly didn't act like he was going to kill the ref if the ref stopped the fight. You know, I'll say that much about it.
Yeah,
you know,
I would agree.
The only thing, though, John, is that I would have to, you know, kind of put out there and for a thought here is that I think everybody reacts to a situation a lot different. You know, like in your situation, you told the guy you would kill him. And somebody else's situation, it might have went a little bit different. But saying that,
let me just say this. If you're drowning, if you fall in the water and there's guys on the shore and you're drowning, you can't go, hey, could you guys help me for a second? You got to say, hey, I'm drowning. Come get me. There's only one way to react. You know?
But let's be fair, though. I'm Mexican, dude. I'm not going to drown. I know how to swim. All us Mexicans know how to swim.
But no, you know what I'm saying? Like, in a situation like that, under the gun, there's only one way to react. Like,
right.
If you feel the referee might stop the fight, you know, it's universal. Please don't stop this fight. I want to fight. You know what I mean? So in a case like that, it's pretty clear. A referee knows, like, man, this guy doesn't seem to be that interested in fighting that much, you know, and again, like I made sure, and I didn't do it on purpose, it just came out of me. Like I made sure Rudy Battle knew that I was gonna, you know, not that I would have done it, but that's what I felt. Like, I'll kill you if you stop this fight, and it worked, and it saved me. You know, he would have stopped it. If I would have went, you sure, you know, really, you're gonna stop the fight if I get cut? Oh man, you know, he would have stopped it because the only reason he let it go is because I outwardly showed him that despite the cut, as bad as they were, and they were bad, I was willing to endure the punishment.
And to that point, Hopkins has always deferred to the ref. Whether it's a low blow or it's a rabbit punch, we saw that in the Calzaghe fights, and we saw it in the Roy Jones rematch. He's generally, unless it was the Eccles fight where he said, I want to keep going, and he did with one arm, generally he kind of looks for the out with the ref, in my opinion. And, you know, are you going to rule this a low blow? He takes it, like you said, you have to get a little unrealistic. And when he's fouled, he gets a little unrealistic. You know, he fouls all fight. You hit him low once, and suddenly it's the worst low blow in the history of low blows. I think his history came back to him.
Oh, sure. And that's what makes this whole thing so ironic, is that this guy, you know, he gets hit, you know, if you tap him on the belt line and he practically has a seizure. You know, but he'll hit you on the hips. Like, he hit Chad in a break. You know, they were in a little clinch there, and he hit Chad on the hips about six times in a row, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, when the referee was on the other side. And he's gotten famous for that. You can ask any boxing fan in the world, What does Hopkins do when the referee's out of position? And everybody knows the answer. It's like a universal answer. Oh, he hits you on the hip. And in the first round, he tried to headbutt us. So, you know, the fact that he cries and complains so much when he gets, you know, perceived as fouled is kind of ironic. You know, it's kind of, it's almost like you don't feel any sympathy for the guy because he like takes pride in the fact that he's the master at getting away with fouling. I mean, he did it in the first round, and here's the funny thing. I warned the referee, I said, listen, when he fought Tarver, who was a similar height and style of Chad, he threw the jab, the right hand, and he followed it with the top of his head to Tarver's chest. I witnessed him do that 3 or 4 or 5 times. So I told him about that. Literally, in the first round, he did that. He tried to hit Chad with the top of his head, and he missed. Chad stopped briefly and like glanced at him, hey, ref, he's headbutting. And the ref said, I'll catch him on the next one. That's what he told Chad.
Wow.
Now, how do you catch him on the next one? Catch him on the one he just did 3 seconds earlier. You know, so Bernard tried early, and I knew he would just because, again, I think he sees Chad as being weak, and part of his way of getting over on Chad was going to be to hit him on the hips and do all those type of things. I mean, again, when he threw the right hand and missed it, he draped himself on top of Chad. So I'm trying to think of what Chad was thinking. Now, here you are, you duck the punch. Now, that should be the end of it. You duck the punch. Now, you duck the punch, now the guy's on top of you. And the funny thing is, Gene Pascal, I read an interview a couple weeks ago where Gene Pascal said that one trick that Bernard does is he tries to put all his weight on you in order to get you tired. Like anybody that's boxed knows what that feels like. Like somebody pushes down on you and you push
right
back up against them, it drains your whole body. I'm assuming that Chad figured that was what was happening because I had actually warned him. I told him what Gene had said, and that's exactly what he was. He was on top of Chad. So Chad probably figured that, and he probably in his head said, well, you know what? I'm not gonna stand for that. And he got him off.
Yeah.
Were you guys happy? John, is Chad now and yourself, in all honesty, are you guys happy with this win here? And if
not at all.
Okay.
So, no, I hate it.
Do you guys feel like moment was stolen?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, whoever's fault or nobody's fault or whatever, but that's not the way. You know, it's like Luis Santana when he won the title against Terry Norris because he got hit. I think he got hit when he was down and he got knocked out. And
right.
So he won the title after getting blasted. You know, that's not how you want to do it. That's not Cassius Clay beating Sonny Liston, you know, on a retirement. You know, it's a little different. So, yeah, that was a, you know, I didn't want it to end like that. I wanted it to, I would much rather them go to 12 and let it play out the way nature meant it to be. So, yeah, this isn't the way I wanted to get a win. And now it's a technical draw anyway.
So, being that it's a draw, do you guys want a rematch? And do you think that B-Hop would give a rematch to fight for that belt once again?
You know, the way boxing is now, I'm sure that because of the way it happened and because of the anger on both sides, I'm sure if they tried to go to the negotiations, it would be a huge, you know, drama. Everybody would be trying to get leverage and they'd be trying to one up the other side and it would probably be the worst negotiation in history of boxing. I mean, we want to get the championship of the world. That's the only reason you should be a professional boxer. So Bernard has the title. We would certainly want to fight. I know. Speaking for myself, I want to fight whoever the champion is. Chad is an elite level light heavyweight. He's at that, you know, at that doorstep. So whoever it is, we want to fight for the championship of the world.
That's kind of off the beaten path, John, but, you know, you guys haven't brought this up at all. Pascal did. Drug testing is a major issue in our sport. And, you know, people have kind of looked at Manny Pacquiao as, at least his detractors, look at him as a poster child for using PEDs. But here's a 46-year-old champion who's beating guys half his age, has extended his career, and only Pascal has really questioned him about it. And Hopkins said he'd take tests, but they didn't take any tests. Is that a concern to you guys? Was that something that you would want to explore, or did you feel like you were not in a position to do that?
I would never question anybody. You know, to tell you the truth, like about those type of things, I honestly, me personally, I don't know enough about them to even question. I don't know what, I've never dealt with them, and I always thought steroids just make it real big. you know, like Schwarzenegger. You know, that's what I thought they did. So I don't really, I honestly don't know enough about them. I mean, somebody actually brought it up to me not too long ago. This is like a boxing fan, and they brought it up saying, you know, should check into that, you know, this guy to be in that good of shape and to be that trim at that age and everything. You know, but again, I'm not qualified. Like, me personally, I'm not qualified. And I've actually never even discussed that with Chad or anybody in our camp. It's never even come up.
That's interesting. I mean, most people just want to get in there and show their skills. They don't really care about gaming the other guy. I mean, that's, you were talking about the worst negotiation in history, and it just made me think of Pacquiao Mayweather, which is, I think, still holds the record.
We'd be going for that title. We'd be making an attempt at it.
Well, let's say they turn it over, and you guys, you know, you already lost the belt. Where does he go from here? I mean,
did you guys even get the belt that night at the stable?
You know, we didn't come think of it. Now that you bring it up, and somebody brought it up to me earlier today because they wanted to see a picture of Chad with the belt, and I started thinking about it, and I realized I never saw the belt in the ring, and I seem to remember somebody in our camp commenting that they, I assume they mean the WBC, took off right after the fight in the ring, and they took the belt with them. So as far as I know, there are no pictures of Chad with the belt. I don't think he ever saw the belt.
Wow.
That
was another thing, too. You know, it's a WBC fight, and the BC is the only one with instant replay.
Yeah.
Did they ever bring that up to you guys? And why wouldn't they have used it then? You know, it seems like if they took off with the belt, they'd already made their decision what they were going to do. But why no instant replay when we had it available? It seemed to be a logical time to use it.
Yeah, I mean, if there was ever a time in boxing history to use it, that was one of them. You know, your answer, you know, I have no idea. Honestly, I have no clue. I haven't really discussed it with anybody. It would have been a good time to use it, though, definitely.
So going forward, are you going to stick with Chad and you guys are going to work together? Have you guys discussed that at all?
Well, I actually talked to him about 2 hours ago, and he said he'll see me in the gym this Monday. He doesn't want to take time off between fights anymore. And, I mean, you know, on my end, I felt the training camp went very well, and he actually, we had a long talk in the lobby of the hotel after the fight for a couple hours, actually. A bunch of us were down there. It was kind of like a post-fight party, and from everything that he told me, he was extremely happy. He actually, if I was ever going to feel good about my training skills, it would be then, because he really made me feel like I was Superman, you know, for him. Like, he said he loved the way we worked together. He loved the way that I talked to him and the way that I showed him things and the way I, you know, I have different things I do that I think are a little different than other trainers. I text message Chad every night after the gym and just commented to him, you know, on how things went. And I actually typed out a sheet of things I wanted him to remember about the fight just so he could read it and visualize it at night when he was in his room, when nobody was around, just little things like that. And he said he really appreciated it. So, I mean, barring any unforeseen situation, as far as I know, we're together to the end at this point.
Awesome. That's good to hear. You guys seem like a really nice match.
Thank you. You know, I mean, and the thing people need to realize about Chad is, I mean, he's really a good guy. I know some people were turned off by the, you know, the outward emotions he showed, but that's all it is. It's just he was caught up in the moment. I mean, he's really a good guy. If people met him and talked to him, you know, I mean, I just really think they would love the kid.
I actually really enjoyed the way he acted after the fight. I mean, it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard, telling John Pascal to sit your ass down with them skinny jeans.
Oh, yeah, I was sitting right there. And let me tell you something, Gene looked like he swallowed a golf ball when he heard that. I mean, you've never seen somebody shut down. I mean, he literally, the look on his face, it was like, he just, like when you say, wow, this guy didn't know what to say. Like, he literally did not know what to do. I bet if he could have disappeared, because the whole room laughed, and
if he could have disappeared off the face of the planet, I think he would have done so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He actually did sit down with his skinny jeans right after that.
Oh, well, because they were, you know what, and I realized, you know, I, even before Chad said anything, I thought they were kind of skinny. Like, they did look kind of tight. And when he said that, I mean, man, that was pretty good. Like, you know, Chad could have been a comedian that night, because for him to come out with that just out of the blue on his first moment was pretty good. Don Rickles would have been proud of him.
Especially like baby in hand, you know, that's what I thought was great. He was just talking mess. He's just holding his baby in his other hand, like just, you know, casual. Just, it was nice. It was nice to see his personality and kind of that passion that everybody's asked for. I thought it was, I've heard more people say it was a great thing for him than not.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? I talked about it to the gym, and I'll tell you a little secret that I have. I actually told one of the reporters today, and he put it online. So I'll tell you, like, one thing I told Chad, I said, you have to listen to your critics. You should listen to your critics. You should listen to people that don't like you, because they're the ones that tell you more truth than people that do like you, you know? And it's like, you know, if your wife asks you, you know, how do these pants look on me? Well, you have to say they look good, regardless.
Right.
But somebody who doesn't care is going to tell you, those are the ugliest jeans I've ever seen in my life. You know, what are you going to wear those for? You know, you got to be like Kramer on Seinfeld. You know, that's
right.
What they used him for, to tell the truth, because they didn't want to say anything. And so I told Chad, listen to your critics. Like, people that dislike you as a boxer, listen to why. Because the consensus of a lot of people was, he didn't show that passion. A lot of people didn't like him, but they said if he would show the passion, he'd probably be an amazing boxer. And I told him, I said, I agree to a certain degree. Like when he fought Diacano, I said if he would have put together the punches like I know he's capable of doing, because I've seen Chad and Jim put punches together where it actually occurred to me he was capable of killing a man. I actually thought, it occurred to me that this one guy we were sparring with, and this wasn't for this fight, this was years ago, it actually occurred to me how a man could kill another man in the gym. I really thought that. It crossed my mind. And I told him, I said, when you fought Diacano, if you would have fought to your absolute utmost ability and not, you know, coasted at times and really put it together, people would be in awe of what you could do. They would love you. You would be pound for pound. People would love you. They'd flock to see you if you fought with the passion that I know you have and you've shown in glimpses. And I think that's one reason why he was so upset that this fight didn't play out, because he was ready to do that. And you could see he was going forward. I don't think many people expected him to walk Hopkins down like he did. But that, I think, is part of his new persona. He's a great boxer, and we're going to continue to box, but he's not going to just have it be where he looks like he's a passive guy who's falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right about the whole listen to your critics and be like, you know, listen to the Kramers out there, you know, because if that's one thing, I remember that one episode when Kramer told that girl, you know, you're a pretty girl, but if you got a nose job, it's almost what Chad Dawson,
right.
You know, a lot of us are saying, he's a really good fighter, but God, does he needs a personality, man. And we saw that personality come out, man.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. And, you know, and I stress that to him, and you know, I think you're going to see more of that from him in the future.
I look forward to it.
Hey, man, thanks again for coming on. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and have a great night. And I hope you guys, I hope you find out what's going to happen with that decision from CSAC.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me. And you know, it's an honor to be on your show. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much, John. We'll talk soon.
All right. Talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
All right.
Well, there you go. John Iceman Scully, the head trainer of Chad Dawson on Leaving the Ring, telling us his thoughts. And, you know, I like the fact they said, you know what? Yeah, we received the TKO, but it's not the way we wanted it. And they would like a rematch. And now it depends on what's going to happen with that turnaround with the decision is CSAC. Are they going to keep it a TKO, or are they going to turn it and make it a no contest to or a draw? More likely a draw. And more likely we'll find out what the negotiations are going to draw out. Is Bernard Hopkins going to be interested in wanting to face Dawson again? Because I think it all boils down left to Dawson wanting to fight him. you know, the thing is that politics and money get involved with our sport, and it just it really ruins it, you know. But
what's
we'll
interesting
have to wait
is the WBC, the one thing they didn't rule on, they gave Hopkins back his belt. They didn't say an immediate rematch because this is such a strange outcome.
Right.
They didn't order an immediate rematch. I find that very, very funny that, sure, they are looking for justice, but really, you know, it's a two-part justice thing. Give the guy back his belt. Okay, fine. You don't agree with the decision? Fine. But shouldn't there be an immediate rematch? I mean, if ever there was a need for one, isn't this it?
Well, let's clear this, too. The WBC did not give Bernard Hopkins the belt because it was never taken away from
yeah,
okay? Now, for a minute, I was going to suggest that maybe, Sean Pascal hit it, but the jeans were too tight. You would have been able to see the big old belt buckle sticking out of the jeans there, you know?
That's very true. Yeah. It was kind of like, it was not even jeans. It was like a very, very tight tuxedo outfit.
Really?
Like, It was kind of Danny Terrio, Dance Fever, kind of like.
Oh,
know,
no.
Updated. But
no.
Very, yeah. Like Robert Conrad from the Wild Wild West. You know, it was just a very, like, why is that so
maybe
tight?
He was
and how
going
did he get
to the
it
premiere?
On?
Maybe he was going to the new premiere for Footloose. I don't know. We got him. Robert the Ghost Girl should be on in a few minutes here. Oh, that's the song Leaving the Ring, and then Eloy Perez, two Bay Area fighters. And, you know, Robert Ghost Guerrero, he had a pull out of his fight with Marcos Chino Madonna because his shoulder got hurt as well. And we're going to find out what's up next for him. I know he was down at the Staples to see the fight. I'd like to hear his take and see what his thoughts about that. And if he's in agreement with us or if he's agreeing with the rest of the other folks thinking that, you know, that shouldn't have been called TKO. Let's let fight fans in on the conversation. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Also, don't forget, man, pick up your copy of Undisputed Fight Magazine. We got the November issue coming out next month, but check out the October issue. It has some great articles. So if you haven't had a chance, go check out the preview at UndisputedFightMagazine.com. Let's patch in. Oh, man, let's patch in our homie, man. D. Big D, what's up,
yo,
brother? You're all live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Voice of Reason. What's happening? What's happening, man?
Good.
Y'all know I'm about to let my nuts hang on this bullshit right here now.
Go ahead,
what
man.
What the fuck is wrong with people, man? I'm looking at Facebook, and everybody and their mama is saying, hip, hip, hooray. All right, yeah.
Right.
That fucking dude got what he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some fucking bullshit, man. You know, this man jumped. I'm yelling out what everybody else done, well, what y'all done yelled out pretty much already. Dude jumped on fucking Chad's back, man.
Right.
It's his fucking fault he landed the way he landed. Whether he's hurt or he ain't hurt, whatever, I don't give a damn. He landed that way. That's on him. It's his fault. How
right.
He got fucked
yeah.
up. He couldn't continue.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally
that's
agree.
That's bullshit right there, though, man.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how banged up you got or any of that. It's you were fouling, and then you fell down, and you went boom, and that's it. That's your problem. You
exactly.
know, that's a YP. That's not a YP.
You know, the way I see it, he threw a punch, Chad got out the way, and he ducked. He did duck pretty low. And people say, oh, he grabbed his leg. Man, I don't know what the hell these people looking at. He ain't grabbed the damn leg. He started to grab that leg.
Right.
He didn't grab Hop leg. He didn't grab that leg. It was more of a brush.
Yeah.
He more brushed.
To me, it
was like a brush.
It almost seemed like he was making sure that the leg didn't go anywhere he didn't want it to go. He kind of just controlled it a little bit, let it go. As he was shouldering him. It wasn't like he held the leg, shouldered him, and made sure that he upended. It wasn't a body slam. It
right.
wasn't a flip. He bumped him off. Tito Trinidad
right.
was famous for that for years. Hopkins has done it for years. All kinds of boxers use that kind of, you know, chicken wing move to get a guy off of them. It's a common move in boxing. It's only when some dude gets hurt, you know, it's like that old saying. It's all fun and games until somebody loses an eye. You know, then it's just hilarious. But in this case, you know, it's a guy that's
that's fouled and fouled and fouled for years. We've called him an old, crafty veteran. Well, we've all, you know, collectively ignored the fact that he's actually an old, dirty veteran. You know, and I'm sorry, but
he is a dirty fighter, man. I cannot stand that fucking dude, man. I know I ain't say that shit. I haven't said that before to y'all, man. I cannot stand Bernard Hopkins.
I like Bernard, man.
I cannot stand. Hey, that's like he's like at the top of my list of fighters I cannot fucking stand, man. You know, because everything is okay for him to do shit. Okay,
right.
For him to be dirty and shit, but somebody else do it, and then you get the sink and everything else thrown at you, or whatever,
yeah.
You know. But it is what the fuck it is. Hey, I guarantee you, I bet you he won't fight Dawson again. I bet you he won't fight him in a rematch. They'll find a fucking way to get out of that rematch.
You know,
HBO somehow.
Well, there's no rematch clause. So
right.
He's not bound in any way, and I think it's very important to note that in the WBC ruling,
there was
no immediate rematch.
This is going to be the ironic thing here, and I was telling you, Gabe, remember after this happened, I go, you know, if it didn't end at a TKO, and if it would have ended as a no contest or a draw where Hopkins retains the title, I can guarantee he would say, I'm not giving him a rematch. He's a dirty fighter. You know what I'm saying? And that's what's going to happen. You know, if CSAC says we're going to kind of follow the steps of what the WBC has done, I can guarantee that's what you're going to hear from Bernard Hopkins. I'm hoping, like I said, you know, I'm not too harsh on him. I'm a B-Hop fan, but I'm hoping that, you know, Bernard's going to go, no, I do want to fight him because I do want to clarify who's the best light heavyweight out there. But I go back again that this was a fight that he really did not want. Hey, D, I got to put you on hold, brother, because we got our next guest, but don't hang up because I still want to talk to you about this here. Let's get in our next guest, man, a good friend of ours, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. What's up, brother? You're on live right now. You there?
Yeah, how's it going, Dave?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing? How's your shoulder going, man?
Shoulder's going great. Got my surgery. You know, I'm in rehab now, just, you know, taking it one day at a time, getting healthy.
So let's talk a little bit, man, because the big fight, the fight that a lot of us were anticipating, saying fight of the year, you know, this is a fight that San Jose, California needed, was all ready to go, and it was what, maybe a week before that you get the injury. How big of a blow was that for yourself? Not just your camp and not just because of the training, but and spiritually, how big of a blow for yourself?
I mean, it was huge. It was huge. You know, 10 days out to the fight. It was actually my last day of sparring. It was actually light sparring. You know, just threw a bad punch, tore the shoulder. You know, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, especially when you're in incredible shape, ready to go. Game plan's good. Everything's ready. You know, the whole camp's pumped up about the fight, myself. I mean, and then, you know, you tear something. It's rough. It's rough. For about 2 weeks, I was just, I mean, devastated that I couldn't get in the ring and do what I do, especially against a guy like Madonna. You know, I was ready to go. I felt like I was going to destroy him.
You know, after that, Madonna was on Twitter. I know you're active on there as well, but not as active as Madonna or Amir Khan. But you know, Amir Khan was immediately tweeting out that Madonna probably paid you not to get in the ring with them because, you know, you were afraid. No, I mean that he was afraid of you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you're kind of being pulled into that kind of conversation, you know, and you're a fighter and you have that fighter mentality, how do you take that? I mean, how do you look at that? Do you kind of look at Amir's kind of insulting you a little bit, or are you just looking at that he's trying to play Madonna for what has happened between them two?
Oh, yeah. It's both. It's both. You know, he's trying to play Madonna out, and then, you know, also me too. So, you know, I think Khan's, you know, Khan's picking and choosing who he wants to fight. You know, but when it comes down to it, you know, he talks all the time. He's called me out before. He's never signed the contract. You know, when I look at Khan, it's all smoke and mirrors when he talks. You know, and the funny thing is a lot of people believe him. But, you know, I've been trying to get him in the ring. I was hoping I ran into him at the Hopkins fight. I didn't get to run into him. You know, I had a bone to pick with him. I was going to tell him. He's saying nobody wants to fight him at 140 pounds. Hey, I jump at the opportunity anytime. He called me out before he was going to fight Zab Judah, saying that he'll rather fight Guerrero, that Guerrero doesn't run. He comes to fight. Zab Judah's a runner. He don't really want to fight him. He's old, and it's going to be a boring fight. So I said, hey, let's do it. Send the contract. I'm down. I'm ready to go. He ended up fighting Zab Judah anyway. And, the way Matt Kellerman and them spun it was that he's the toughest junior welterweight out there, the best junior welterweight, and Amir Khan destroyed him, and he wasn't in his league. So, like I said, hey, we need to get him in the ring, and, enough talking and running your mouth. Let's do it. Just sign the contract.
Do you think it's a case of a guy that's getting free publicity? He kind of injects himself into a situation that really has nothing to do with him at all. And yet, by acting like the king of the division, the perception becomes he's the king of the division.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, they're talking about doing a tournament. I say the tournament's bullshit. I say, everybody lets them hang and just make the fight. Stop ducking and running. You don't need no tournaments.
There's really no reason. I mean, other than it'd be a series of good fights, which is a pretty good reason to have a tournament. But we kind of already know where Khan stands in the division. We know where Tim Bradley stands in the division. You're about to plant your flag there. It just kind of makes sense. Why don't we just get to the fights that we want to see, I wouldn't mind seeing you and Matisse, get it on. I actually want to see that fight more than I'd rather see you versus Maidana, even though I'd like to see that fight too. They're all action fights. Let me ask you about your shoulder injury, though. You told me we ran into each other at the weigh-in, and you said that you'd had a little bit of a problem with it before, and then it just kind of came to a head. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've always had problems with this since I was a little kid, playing football, different sports and stuff. You get injuries, and, especially in the amateurs, when you're a young fighter, you hurt your arms, you tear rotator cuffs, but, we grew up hard. We grew up rough. For us, it was just put some Bengay, some ice, and take a little bit of time off and back on it. So, we never ever went to the doctor and got stuff fixed. It's always been with me. just having that high tolerance for pain, you just block stuff out. And, getting ready for Madonna, I just tore it all up. And, talking to the doctor, he's like, man, just looking at the MRIs, your whole shoulder's just torn apart. Your rotator's just destroyed. You have a lot of old injuries in there. And, that's part of the cause of its tearing. So, just got it all fixed now. And, it feels good. After the surgery, I had no pain no more. I got full rotation in the arm. And it's starting to get strengthened up. It's feeling real good. It's never felt like this in, I don't know how long.
When you heard it, you were at the fight. When you heard it, did you react the way Hopkins did? And obviously you had a much more serious injury. Was it the same kind of thing where you just hit the ground and couldn't move?
I actually tore it in spine. I was sparring my last six rounds of the camp. I tore it in the third round and finished all six. So, it was hurting. It was hurting bad. But the thing was, is I had a couple riders there. And, if it was just a stinger, I don't want to show that I'm injured or anything and just, ice it up and let it go, let it go away. But, you just suck it up and just get through. And, after I tore it, I just went back. Put ice it all night, see how I was going to feel in the morning. When I got up in the morning, I couldn't move the arm at all.
What was the official diagnosis? Was it a full tear of the rotator cuff?
I had a torn rotator cuff, the rest of it was detached and just floating in there. Doctor was surprised how I was even, fighting and training like that I didn't dislocate it, because your rotators will hold everything together. And,
yeah.
He was kind of amazed. He said he's worked with some of the best pitchers in the world. He's done surgeries on Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, guys like that. And what he's seen in my shoulder, he was like, I can't believe for the kind of contact you have, you know, throwing punches, especially being a southpaw and that's your dominant side, you know, I'm surprised that you never dislocated it. And, you know, he did the research and everything and went through all the research on it. And pretty much he was saying he hasn't seen anything like that.
And you still used it. Wow, that's crazy. No, go ahead, Dave.
That is, yeah, man. Hey, Robert, let's talk a little bit about the 140 for a minute here, you know, because Timothy Bradley, the Desert Storm, signs with Top Rank, okay? And obviously he signed with Top Rank because of the whole Pacquiao sweepstakes. But his comeback fight was Joel Casamayor, who's a guy that you fought. Were you a little surprised that your name was not brought into it? Of maybe being the possibility of fighting Bradley, or were you talked about?
No, not really, because I know Bradley's he's signed with Top Rank, so you know the thing is with Golden Boy and Top Rank, so you know they went that way. I guess you know he's been out for what? I think going on 2 years or something like that, or 9 months.
Yeah.
Well. You know, they're going to bring him back with somebody that, you know, he's going to get in the ring and do his thing. So, you know, but I was surprised Casamayor got that fight. And you know what? I'm happy he got that fight. You know, he got a good fighter, you know, while he's on his way out.
So now you're put down. I mean, you have to wait again and you have to watch everything that's going around you. What is the talks with you right now with Golden Boy? I mean, is there another name? Is San Jose off the plate of having the show there? I mean, what's the next step for yourself?
Right now, everything's just focusing on getting getting back in the gym, training, getting the physical therapy done, and getting the shoulder rehab back to 100%. So, you know, that's the main focus. And then, you know, we're playing it by ear. And then, you know, go from there, see where we go. But I mean, you know, talking with Golden Boy, I'm pretty much just like, hey, you know what? I had a full training camp. You know, I was ready to fight. Pretty much I got ready for the fight but just didn't fight.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like I wasn't sharp. I wasn't anything, and I've just been out for a long time. So I told them, hey, you know what? When I come back, I want to fight. I don't want no tune-up fights. I want to get right in. You know, throw me in with Khan. You know, whoever you got to throw me in with, Madonna. Whoever, I'm ready to go, and you know, I ain't looking for no tuna fights. I want to jump right in.
Now, when you tell them, you know, throw me in with a real fight, throw me in with Khan. What's the body language or the expression on their face? You know, because you know, obviously Khan is somebody that they've been building on to be a superstar for Golden Boy as well.
They come at me like, hey, you know what? If we can make the fight, we'll make the fight. But, you know, really it's all on Khan. It's all what Khan says. You know, Khan, you know, like I said, he's pretty much picking and choosing who he's going to fight. You know, and when it comes down to signing contracts, you know, he calls people out. He runs his mouth, but you don't sign no contracts. He don't send them even. So, you know, I just leave it as that.
Yeah, it sounds like
weird that they treat him like a star in the U.S. when he's kind of a star in the U.K. He sells tickets there, but I don't know if you saw him in Vegas, you know, when he fought Madonna. They didn't sell any tickets. There's a reason why he's in Washington.
Yeah, I heard they gave out comp like 5,000 tickets or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, San Jose was, I think they were about like 100 tickets away from selling out.
Yeah, that was, that's what I heard too.
Yeah, so, and that was 10 days before when I hurt myself. And you know everybody's last minute buyers. You know us Mexicans, Dave, we buy at the last minute. So we go down to the wire, man. We gotta go find a scalper if we have to.
You know, our dads are like, I'm telling you, there's gonna be tickets when you're walking to the arena. You know.
Yeah,
the fighting selling started 10 minutes. And you just scalper. Yeah.
Was that?
So the fight started 10 minutes. You're like, we got time. We can leave the house in a second. Relax. Getting last year.
No, it's if you get your staff, you know, you go lick it, just rub it on the other guy, and you'll go in.
You know, the thing I'm noticing right now, Robert, is there's something I'm taking notice right now, and tell me if I'm wrong about this right now. You know, when I used to talk to Timothy was very cordial, very polite, but then something switched. Same thing with Victor Ortiz. You know, very political, but something switched. With this interview right now, what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like something switched for you. You know, like there's something out with you right now that wants to be released. You know, that you're kind of tired of the politics and you're basically going, look, the best fight out there is me and Amir Khan. And that's the guy that I want. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm a 5-time world champion. You know, what more could I do in boxing? I mean, I've done more than what Mayweather has, what, 7? That's only 2 more than me. And he's, what, been fighting how many years? I mean, I haven't even fought half of what he's, how many, half of the years he's fought in the professionals. I'm already at 5. Khan barely got 2 in the same weight class. I'm 5 in 3 different weight classes. Come on. What more am I going to do to get a big fight?
Right.
I just look at, you know what? A lot of these guys out there, you know, they claim they're the super champs, they're the best in the division, but really, a lot of them, to me, are front runners because a lot of them don't have the nuts to say, let's do it. I'll fight anybody. I don't care who it is. Yeah, they say it, like I said, it's smoke and mirrors. That's all it is. Oh, I want to fight this guy, like Khan called me out.
Right.
Did he send the contract? Oh, I'd rather fight Guerrero. I don't want to fight Zab Judah. I'll fight Guerrero because I know he comes to fight, so everybody's like all pumped up. But then he goes and fights Zab Judah and says, oh, this was the toughest guy out there. Okay, everybody knows Zab Judah. You know, history repeats itself.
Right.
You know, when the tough gets going, he's gone. He's a front runner. He don't like when somebody's digging in his jock. And when you know that about somebody, you're going to take advantage of it.
Right.
If you got a guy that's a 5-time world champion that's hungry as hell, hungrier than a lion, hungrier than anything else. I put myself like I'm a cockroach, man. Nothing's hungrier than a cockroach, dude, and I'm coming. You ain't going to get rid of me. And that's the way I look at it. And, you know how I train, Dave. You know,
right.
Me and my father, dude, we keep it hardcore, dude. We train in the garage, you know, we train in the gym. You know, we don't need all this fancy stuff here, you know. Everything going, hey, when it comes down to it, hey, we got to make those big fights because that's what's killing boxing. If you get all these guys like me, I look at Khan as, you know, as a queen ass. I don't know why he calls himself King Khan. You know, to me, he's a queen. I mean, he don't want to fight. He says he does, but he don't want to fight. And he's saying nobody wants to fight him at 104. He wants to go to 47 now?
Right.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Like his business is finished.
That's why I always say, hey, I'm out here, man. Send me the contract. After you fight, who is he fighting?
He's fighting Peterson, Lamont Peterson.
Peterson. Man. After he fights Peterson, hey, I should be ready to fight. I should be ready to get ready to fight. Send that contract. Let's do it.
Is there unfinished business, though, between you and Marcos Madonna? Because some fight fans feel that fight should still happen. It's an anticipated bout. And also, that wouldn't be a tune-up fight for you. That's a tough, tough, grit fight for yourself.
Oh, yeah. If I could come back and take that fight, too, hey, let's do it. Let's do it. Because like I said, you know what? The one thing I respect about Madonna is he's willing to fight. He don't care who it is. Like with me, at first he was saying nobody wants to fight him, and I had to jam him up and say, hey, you know what? I actually took the fight with you for less money than Eric Morales because I wanted to fight the toughest guy out there. So don't even give me that nobody wants to fight you, man. Shoot, I'm ready to do it with anybody. So if he's ready when I'm ready to do it, let's do it.
There we go.
That's the thing about boxing, and I think you really hit on a great point, Robert, is that's what, you know, sustained us all this time. I've never wondered, you know, gee, is, you know, Floyd Mayweather better than Henry Bruce Ellis? No, I want to see him in with another marquee guy. Like,
I want to see him in with Robert Guerrero.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want a hungry guy? Hey, let's do it. You know, the one thing I see with Victor Ortiz is he got caught into the event. He got caught into the glamour, all the lights, big fight, wow.
The underwear.
Hey, you know what, man? I've been there, done it, dude. I've been on the road for a long time, man. 5-time world champion. you know, Victor Ortiz won the world title and fell into La La Land. And that's what happens to a lot of guys, you know, when they win their first world title. I mean, you know what? It's time, man. It's time. That's all I look at it. It's time to make it happen. Let's do it. Hey, I don't care who it is. It could be Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Hey, let's do it. Manny knows when we sparred. He knows what went on.
Tell us a little bit about that, Robert, because we've talked about it. But you know what? I don't think I've ever heard you really kind of open up about that on an interview.
You know, yeah, I'm not that type of guy that you know, that kisses and tells. Hey, you know what? If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. But you know what? That's why I said, hey, you know what? He knows what happened when we sparred. Freddie knows what happens when we sparred. Everybody in that gym knew what happened when we sparred. That's why, let's do it. Let's make it happen. I really feel styles make fights.
Right.
And you know what? I got the style. You know what? I got the style that God blessed me with to beat anybody in the world. And when you believe in your abilities, you could do anything.
I'll see that, definitely. Unfortunately, we don't know what happened to those sparring, and we're dying to know. Hopefully we get to find
That's
out in the ring.
Make the fight. They can make that fight. Hey, styles make fights. Let's make it happen. I think everybody will be in for a surprise and a treat.
Yep.
That's what we'd like to hear. Robert, last thing too, how's the family doing? You know, we always talk about that. That usually is a precursor to everything we talk about with you. How's everything going at home?
Oh, everything's going great. The wife's great. The kids are great. My time out of the gym right now and just doing physical therapy, you know what? I'm taking advantage of it with my kids and my wife and enjoying the time.
Excellent. When do we expect you back?
I'm hoping to be back, you know, February, March, be back in the ring. I'm hoping to be in the ring about February, March.
Man, I can't wait. I can't wait, man.
I can't wait either. I mean, man, I'm just seeing everything going on in boxing. I'm starving for a fight. I'm starving for a fight. That wheel was turning, man. That wheel was turning. Unfortunately, I got injured. Didn't get that Madonna fight. But you know what? I think 2011 is going to be huge for me. Or 2012 is going to be huge.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it, man.
Recoup, brother, and get back into that ring and, put that pressure on Golden Boy and Amir Khan or Madonna, and let's see you get in there. Let's see you do some. If not, Timothy Bradley or Brandon Bam Bam Rios, man. I want to see you get in with any of those kind of cats right now in San Jose.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And if we can't get at the HP, Robert, my grandmother owns a Victorian house, and it's a huge backyard, bro. We'll hold it there. Knock down
we'll
all the houses
back.
Around.
We'll do a hardcore. We'll do it in the back.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, we'll bring it back the way San Jose used to have the cruising days right there in Story and King. We'll put the ring in the middle of the street in the east side, man.
You know what's funny? I just finished a nice Cadillac, man. Me cruising.
Is that right? Well, there you go. Robert the Ghost Guerrero again here on Leaving the Ring. He's a good friend of ours. He's always fun to have on, but I'm liking the new energy that Robert's bringing. I always told him, you know, I don't call him the Ghost. I call him the Phantom. Robert, again,
the
brother.
Phantom, baby. Yep. Hey, you know what? It's like I said, man. If everybody would let him hang and just let's make the fight. No running, no hiding. Champions fighting champions. The best fighters fighting the best fighters. Hey, you know what? Stop the hiding and running and the talking and all the bullshit. Hey. It's time to fight. Enough words are thrown around, enough said. You know what? You just make these fights, man. And that's what we got to do to bring boxing back.
There you go. You heard it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Robert. Thanks again, brother, for calling
in. Thank you so much.
All right. Hey, good talking to you guys.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care.
Robert the Ghost Guerrero, man. I mean, I'm loving the new energy from him. And,
yeah.
You know, being aggressive, you know, and I think that's what, man, that's what our sport needs. That's what our sport needs, you know. I see Bernard Hopkins getting up on Twitter finally. He's been out of it for a while. And he's, you know, saying, I'm going to address all the haters very soon. To the people who support me, thanks.
he must have injured his Twitter arm. So, you know, that's why it's taken a few days for him to kind of get it back to full strength.
Oh,
he's able to tweet with both hands.
You know what? I'd love to get Bernard Hopkins on Leaving the Ring. We have to try to contact his publicist and see if they'll allow him to come with us to talk a little bit, you know, and talk about that night.
I know how much they love you.
They don't love me. I know that, you know.
If they don't like you, I don't even want to know what they think about me.
They don't like you because I know you. Fight fans, you want to call in right now? You sure can. Phone lines are open here at Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. If you missed part of the show already, don't worry about it. An hour after the show, we always have the archive pops up. Look at that. Got the police coming down. That's actually the ambulance picking up Bernard right now for typing.
That's my ride.
Just kidding. Anyways, be sure to go pick up your digital magazine, Undisputed Fight Magazine. It's we are part of that there. So you can be able to chop it up. I mean, check out what we've been doing and stuff. And all jokes aside, you know, those are jokes. If you're a Bernard Hopkins fan, I'm a big Bernard Hopkins fan. I said that he's the last of the hard men. I wrote an article about him and stuff, you know. But, hey,
wow,
I still stand about what I said about the whole Pat Russell thing. I think that was the right call. But, of course, you know, WBC saw it different. Now, CSAC will probably make their decision, whether it's going to be what we saw or what WBC and Bernard Hopkins and his fans seen. It's to be seen, right?
It's pretty interesting that Bernard's a little angry on his Twitter. He's tweeting angry. He said, if you cowards think I'll let you slide from them comments you made, trust me, I got your bitch-ass chumps. Okay? I guess that would make me the king of the bitch-ass chumps. But, you know, it's America. We're all entitled to our opinions. You know, Suleiman, he's in his own land called Macondo, so he's allowed to make his own decisions.
He's the mayor?
He's actually now the mayor. Actually, I think he's president for life. I forgot that title. I think Jose Suleiman's owned that for a while, and he's not giving it up. Bernard's still the mayor, especially after his tweeting angry. You know, it is what it is. It's boxing. It's its own world. It has its own set of rules. It actually has about 10 or 20 different sets of rules, and depending on the day and who's sanctioning the bout and who's paying who, whatever rule applies, you know. And so that's what we're seeing here. I don't know if any of it really helped boxing. You know, over 3,000 seats comped, you know, barely 3,000 seats, I think a little oversold. It was 7 or 8 East Coast fighters fighting on the West Coast. The Golden Boy took a bath on this promotion. I'm sure the pay-per-view numbers are ugly, and they'll say they can't calculate them because it's too hard. I'm like, how hard is it to count to 20?
Right.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense, the whole thing. It's kind of ironic that they called it Believe It or Not, because look at the promotion.
look at the outcome. Believe it or not, he still retained his title.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing, you know. He says he wants a rematch to prove I'm the man, Chad Johnson,
right.
And shit, but a sucker. All right. Bernard.
Well, let's
take the high road.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, Twitter has made people say things that after they don't want to hold up to. But then again, you know, let's find out. Bernard Hopkins, let's see if he does that. Let's patch in some fight fans. Let's see. Let's go with Norman, who wants to talk Hopkins versus Dawson. What's up, brother? You're on live right now with Leaving the Ring.
Nice to see him gracious in victory. What's up, man?
You know what? In all honesty, I kind of feel like this is like a monster of his own creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times we've seen Bernard Hopkins kind of exaggerate, play to the referees, and use those sort of veteran tactics to buy time and to, you know, maybe get a point taken away from the other guy. And I'm a Hopkins fan. I've been a Hopkins fan since as long as I can remember. But I feel like I'm so sick of seeing this fight. You know what I mean? I don't want to see you bending over,
right,
pretending to be hurt. And the thing is, this guy, like Gabe mentioned on the next round earlier this week, you know, he's the dirtiest guy in boxing. You know, you're the dirtiest guy in boxing, bro. And then you play this whole I'm from the street, this tough guy role. And then and then Roy Jones, who hasn't hurt anybody in damn near 10 years, clips you and you want to fall over like you're in pain.
I was just gonna mention that right now too, Norm. I was just mention that, you know.
And you know what? I'm at the point where I'm like, you know what? It is what it is.
Let's be honest, man. Let's be honest. Gangster, I even tweeted this. Bernard, you're not a gangster anymore. If anything, you're a studio gangster. Let's stop this already. You know, you were locked up how many years ago? You know, at one point, you got to realize, you know, you just can't jock that symbol anymore. It's just not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I don't think the fight should be ruled a TKO. I mean, Chad Dawson didn't TKO him, so I don't think it should be a TKO. But at the same time, he shouldn't get his ass on that shit. Because that's like, you know, that's a cop-out. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like a test drive. Like, you know, let me get in the ring with this guy I can't handle him. Let me get out. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, you put a bunch of cigarettes out in the car and you ran up a bunch of miles on it. And you took it around the block
right.
a bunch of times, partied with your girl. And then you're like, you know, I don't think this car is for me. I think I don't want to buy it. You know?
Right.
Yeah, exactly right. Would this be fair to you? Let's say the WBC wasn't insane or corrupt. Let's say the WBC said, okay, regardless of what the commission says, we're going to order an immediate rematch because there was kind of a dual foul situation and a guy got hurt, the guy that initiated it, no one gets the belt. They have to do an immediate rematch, and the winner of that will have earned the right to wear the belt.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fair?
That'd be fair, but what would be even fairer, put it on ABC, because I first and foremost
bring
I
back
pay,
Tuesday night
I'm
fight
paying
put it on there
$15 I'm already paying you know what $15 extra for HBO, I'm paying for ESPN,
right?
Put it on Fox or Epic for free. Because we already know what type of fight it's going to be. A bunch of guys, you know, fencing and pawing and running away from each other. So put it on something free. So, yeah. Order a rematch and put it on Fox. That'd be perfect.
Absolutely,
that
man.
Works.
I agree.
That
you
works
know?
For me.
I even said that. But when the first time they announced it, I was like, you know, this doesn't belong on pay-per-view. You know?
Well, that was also it wasn't on pay per view because they felt it was such a marquee matchup. It was on
pay
per view
because of the budget that HBO spent. You know what I mean? They had to make you know that's the shitty part though is that as fans we have to pay for the mistakes. You know what I mean? It's that's why we compare the government to a lot of the way these promoters work and do things. You know, in these networks because. We end up as taxpayers paying for the mistakes that they did, you know, and it's BS. It's really BS, you know.
I think it's very irresponsible of Bernard to be attacking fans that disagreed or writers that disagreed in this situation when we were faced with a fight that we didn't ask for. It was done through the politics of HBO, and then we got a pay-per-view that we didn't ask for because it was done by the politics of HBO and the ineptitude of those people. And then we got an inept, crazy-ass fight, and now we got a champion that nobody really respects. We have a guy that took the belt, and he lost respect, or people didn't respect how he won the belt. The whole thing is just an absolute mess. And to me, you know, and I just thought of it right now, but it's like, to me, the most fair thing would be, sorry, but both of you guys screwed up. You were fouling. He fouled you back. Neither of you guys get this belt, and if you want it, you're going to have to fight for it, but, you know, I don't think it should be at our expense. You know, I would be fine with it on regular HBO. You know, we don't have to bump it all the way down to ESPN level, but you know, at the same time, aren't we kind of owed a free one a little bit? I mean, we had to pay for this. Then you're going to ask me to pay for it again, or it's going to take away a date for somebody like Tavares Cloud, who I'd much rather see fight Chad Dawson than Bernard Hopkins.
You know, somebody like DeMarco, who looked awesome last week.
Exactly. Who we probably won't see in that kind of position again, unless Gary Shaw is able to, you know, finagle in some sort of TV date. You know, he's gonna be fighting in Nebraska again, you know, and not on a pay-per-view. That was the thing. I'm glad you brought that fight up. Here we had a Fight of the Year candidate. Hell of a fight.
Right.
Reminiscent of, you know, Cotto versus Margarito in its reversal and the way it ended so abruptly. And yet, what are we talking about? The most talked about 2.5 minutes or 4.5 minutes, however long, it was 5.5 minutes, so it was almost the end of the round.
It was close to 6,
second
yeah.
Round. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the most talked about 6 minutes in the history of the sport. Nothing really happened. Not much happened. A lot of gray area dirty tactics happened, and a couple good shots landed with Chad. That's about it. And yet, here we are stuck in this.
Exactly.
It drives me crazy. I try to get people to watch boxing. And then shit like this happens, and you go, you know what? Never mind. Go watch UFC.
Oh no! You know what's funny? I didn't even tell anybody to watch it. You know what I mean? Normally, I'd be the Jehovah's Witness knocking on your door and telling you, hey, you know, watch the fight this Saturday. This time, I wasn't. I stayed home. I made sure
it was
I didn't mention anything. Hey, Norman, I'm gonna put you on hold, okay, brother?
All right,
thanks
my
for calling in, man.
Thanks for calling in. I was real quick. I was at a club the night before at a local bar. And I was leaving, and the door guy is this older Mexican guy, and he's a boxing fan. And I said, are you going to be able to watch the fights tomorrow? And he's like, no, I'm going to miss it. He's like, I don't really care about Ross and Hopkins. That's going to be a terrible fight. I want to see DeMarco versus Linares. That's going to be a fight of the year. And to me, you know, that's a real fight fan. Like, he can look at the crap and go, and I actually thought Dawson Hopkins would be good, but he can look at what he doesn't like, but he knows a sure thing when he sees it. And
right.
It's those guys that are, you know, HBO will do the replay, and they'll show highlights of from what I understand, Linares, DeMarco, and then they'll analyze the shit out of that debacle that we had. And then we wonder, why is boxing dying? Why doesn't anybody care?
Right.
Because we don't treat it right, you know? If you don't take care of your kid, and you don't feed him, and you don't give him love, and you're not there for him when he needs you to instill good things into him, well, yeah, he's going to end up an idiot. He's going to be a criminal, or he's going to just not go anywhere with his life. Because, you know, the people that are in charge of taking care of that person didn't. And
right.
It's boxing, right? This is exactly how boxing is.
No.
To me, you know, people that argue for this, that it's a good thing, and finally the WBC, you're getting the support that you deserve.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking about that, we got some, we do got some fights for that's coming up this Saturday. Nonito Dornier and Mikey Garcia are going to be back into the ring on HBO After Dark, man. You know, I'm excited to see Nonito and Garcia. The opponent wise that were picked, not too excited. You?
Which one?
For Nonito. It's happening this Saturday, right? Am I right?
Yeah, I'm not that excited about it.
Yeah,
it's okay. You know, what's weird about
it's
it
a keep
is,
busy. It's a keep busy type of fights for both of them. You know, that's
well,
Narvaez that's what
is
I'm
a good
at.
Fighter. He's a good 115 pounder. That's the problem.
And right.
This is why I get so annoyed by pound for pound. Is guys go crazy about it. Like even people after the Barker fight with Martinez said, well, Martinez didn't look that good, so I'm going to move him down to number 4, and I'm just going to randomly move Nonito Dornier up to 3. I'm like, well, how does that make any sense? I mean, he did very well against Montiel. I can't take that away from him, but Montiel was who he was. He was an older champion moving up in weight to a weight class that he hadn't been particularly successful at, you know, at least at the elite level, in my opinion. And he got blown out by a guy that's probably going to top out at 126. He's not even reached his peak yet. That's impressive, I guess. Where is this other pound for pound? Shouldn't you have to fight a guy that's an elite, that's dangerous? I mean, okay, he took
right.
out Victor Chinian, but that was years ago. I don't really understand it. I like Nonito. I think he's a very, very talented fighter. But I've yet to see him really tested and show me something. Like, you know, Linares had a chance to show us how great he was. And instead he showed us that he's not quite there yet. You know,
exactly.
And Linares had that chance again, the Valero fight, and he showed us he wasn't ready then.
That's what,
but now,
you know,
he is.
That's what really just gets me sometimes when you see fight fans that like a one-siding you know, when they're so dominant, you know, and it's, how can I put this, man? Well, I'm going to be nice about what I'm about to say. I'm an Onito fan. Don't get me wrong. But when I see people tweet out, you know, this guy's pound for pound, this guy is better than, you know, so-and-so, when have you ever seen a small guy like this, look like that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, and I sit back and I kind of just go into that zone of when I have my rant about Floyd and about Pacquiao, you know, where, yeah, if you pick the right opponents, you're always going to look fantastic. Roy Jones Jr. was notorious for doing stuff like that when you pick the right opponents, you know. Nonito, to me, he still has a lot to prove. For me to really sit there and go, this guy is number one, this guy is that. You know, when I look at him being surpassing like Andre Ward, I sit back and go, how is that? When Ward has been fighting the guys that he's not supposed to win against. You know, when he was the guy that was not even picked to be a winner of the Super Six. And we've watched him really go and grow and adjust. Those are the things that you got to look for. Those are the things that make me go, okay, we got something here special. He's not always going to be Donovan. He's not always going to be Purdy. But he's up against something. He's up against a wall that he doesn't necessarily have a jackhammer. So he's going to pick up a sledgehammer and put some sweat and some tears and some blood behind it. When I see people praise a fighter for doing something that to a fighter that's already been done before, I really go back and go, are you really praising this guy because he's going to be a great fighter or he is a great fighter? Or is this because of the simple fact that you're recognizing something that is familiar to you, which is either nationality or because you see that there's a big wagon full of fans and you're going to go, hey, you know what? I want to be part of that party because it looks cool. That's what I start looking at, and I go, man, seriously, guys, honestly, I only think there's maybe a very small town of us really hardcore boxing fans, and there's just the big city of slickers out there that we have to frown on and go, look at these guys. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right in there. It is – a lot of it is nationalism with Donaire. There's a lot of kind of – front running, I think, by the media, jumping on a Donaire. He's going to be something. He's not quite there yet. And so they want to be that guy that's Donaire's guy. And so they cover the hell out of him. And some of it is also, you know, maybe a regional thing in that they live near him, and so they're all over it. There's a lot of factors, you know. But I think number one among them is that people fall in love with the last thing they see, and often they don't even understand what it is they are seeing. And I think that's the case with Nonito, you know, that here's a guy that, you know, he's been matched very well. And even Narvaez, it's like, you know, Narvaez is kind of a closet, not pound for pounder, but he's a closet favorite of a lot of people. You know, he's a guy that is a fight fan's fighter. And he's being fed to Nonito, and it'll be yet another challenger, and you can sell it well. But the bottom line is he's very small at that weight that they're going to be fighting, and Nonito is growing out of that weight. That's just the cold, hard facts of the fight. And so I think there's little buzz on the fight because of that fact. You know, here's a guy that's a world champion, and I don't know anybody that's giving him a chance to win. You know, and that's kind of weird.
And then, you know, it just leads down to where, to me, this is what's happened a lot with fighters and our sport, is that you end up getting guys that are put in soft. You end up getting guys that are looking spectacular against a name fighter that's probably lived the last of their days, and they're blowing them out, and they're being super impressive, okay? But then when it comes to the nitty-gritty of, okay, this is going to be a super fight, this is this and that, we end up falling into getting a dud. Why? Because these fighters were not prepared or prepped correctly, so that when they do get in with another fighter that's been equally kind of, you know, jogging up the hill to meet at the top of the hill and find out who's king of the hill, one guy's really kind of at the level he should be at. The other one is kind of at the level that he's not, because he hasn't been, you know, battle tested. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of our super fights. I mean, I don't – honestly, I can't even think right now off the top of my head, when's the last time we've had a super fight? A real super fight. Not labeled a super fight, but a real super fight that was put on pay-per-view where you really walked away feeling that you weren't robbed, that you were happy with a smile giving your money away. I can't think of a fight.
I mean, that's been labeled a super fight. No. You know, I think the fight that's left a smile on my face most this year was the Tyson Marquez, Luis Concepcion fight that nobody really saw unless you were following it on the internet. You know, you can see it now on YouTube. But in terms of super fight, I mean, going back to De La Hoya Trinidad, that was a fight that was supposed to be for all the marbles. And, you know, it felt like it was for like two or three marbles. You know, it was not what we expected it to be. I mean, maybe during Trinidad's run, those were kind of super fights. De La Hoya or Trinidad versus Vargas was kind of a super fight. That was a big fight that left a smile on my face, not Vargas's. Maybe Hoskins, Trinidad.
Right.
That period of time, I think there was big fights happening that lived up to the bill.
Right.
But generally, it's always, to me, seemed like outside of the Hopkins and or the Hagler and Leonard and Duran, Hearns era, super fights have been a little more one-sided. Maybe Tyson Holyfield is probably another one that was an exciting, excellent fight. Probably more drama-filled than it was exciting. We couldn't believe what we were seeing.
Right.
But more often than not, it's always the off-the-beaten-path fight. You know, like, it's always amazing to me to think about how Corrales versus Castillo only had, like, I think less than 2,000 or less than 3,000 people there. There wasn't many people at that fight. You know, I was even offered a free ticket if I could just fly down there. And I was like, I'll watch it on TV. You know, and I passed on that fight. It's always those fights that are kind of the hidden gems that end up turning out to be something that blow our minds. And as long as the mainstream media holds on to fights like these and says this is what's going on in boxing, then they just clearly are showing that they don't get it. There's a lot more fights to look forward to. Concepcion and Marquez, too, later on this year, is certainly one of those fights. You know, Kirkland and Angulo. You know, anything that's...
Yeah, you're right. You know,
that's going to be a great fight. And mainstream media probably won't touch it. You know,
but then you're going to have the naysayers, though. You know, I mean, I already hear people here going like, you know, well, Kirtland got knocked out. It would have been a lot more anticipated and a bigger fight
if
it wouldn't have, et cetera. Hey, let me patch in our next guest, and then we're going to get to our fight schedule, and then we'll do our closing here. Let's see the Prince, Eloy Perez. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. How you doing, man?
What's going on, man?
Hey, excellent knockout, bro. I mean, the beat was unleashed and stuff. I guess Max, you know, was when that happened, I was with another writer, a friend of mine, and
right.
I said, I guess, you know what? I think Max had enough. I think he was like, you know what? I'm gonna shut these guys up. I'm gonna shut the media up and let Eloy go out there and just be a dog.
You know, it was I just started off. I had a great camp. You know, I was in camp for 3 months.
Uh-huh.
Learned a lot, got stronger, just like I told you, you know, good things take time. You know, I just got to keep going, you know, like, it doesn't stop there. But it was an amazing night, you know, I wasn't looking for it, but I told you I was going to come forward. I was going to start using my strength and my power. I mean, I know I have it in me.
Yeah, you know, like I've said before, I've seen you spar, and I've seen you fight bigger guys, and I've seen you push them back. You know, and it was good. It was finally good to see that, you know, that Max was willing to say, okay, let's show these guys that we can pick and choose what we're going to do.
Right,
you know?
Let's get down.
Yeah, let's get down. You know what I mean? Enough with the clean shirt. Let's get it dirty
right.
A little bit, you know? Now,
right.
When you walked out of there, assumingly after you were done with the fight, what was the reception from the fans, man? How did the fans see you? I mean, because they knew that you were a great boxer, a great counterpuncher, you know, great on your feet. But the punching power was something that always left a huge question for a lot of folks.
But, you know, that night was just – it was awesome. You know, a lot of people showed up. I think it was like 3,000 people there. I think it was sold out. It was awesome. You know, they were pumped. I mean – Shit, it's in Salinas, you know, they were just all
they were all tight, you know. They were just all pumped, you know, and proud to be there and see the fight, you know, and live and what happened. You know, it's just a good positive thing for all of them, you know, and we didn't even have fights break out or anything. So it was a great night. It was an amazing night. You know, here in Salinas, you know, you never know what's going
right.
to happen.
No, I know, man. You know, it used to be, is this still the capital murder, man?
I mean, it was up there. It was up there.
No, it was. It was labeled as it. One time, I remember when I was living down over there in 2000 and 2001 and 2, you know, there was certain districts of the city there, man. You just couldn't drive through because you were for sure you were going to get shot at, and I would hear gunshots in the middle of the night, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because before I got here, I mean, or even heard of Salinas, I read about it, like, in a magazine, like, Salinas, you know, like, one of the top homicides. Like, it was crazy. Like, I read about it, you know? And then I moved in here. But it's not that bad. It's getting better. I think it's getting better. You got to be looking for trouble to get in trouble, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely, man.
So, I mean, they're all good people. You know, when I'm running, you know, I see some homies, you know, but I always wave, you know, I always smile and wave, and they just wave back, you know? Doesn't matter. You know, I mean, like that, though. I'll just wave at anybody. Like, what's up? You know, when I'm running.
There
you go. You know, just
going through
the neighborhoods.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya.
We talked last night. I guess here we are again, Eloy.
What's up, Gabriel?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I just got done training.
So you pretty much... That last camp, we talked about this last night. I'm trying to try not to bore you with the same questions, but there was a little bit of taking off the reins, but also we talked about how, you know, almost like an Andre Ward, you've kind of slowly built towards that moment where you're okay, I'm going to be exactly who I am in the ring. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you've developed as more of a pure boxer, not, you know, a full-on puncher, but something that's a little more in between, something that's more complete?
I would say more, I'm explosive, you know, but I was using a lot more of my feet, you know, and dodging, but I should be, you know, cracking these dudes when I'm, you know, when I'm making them, when I have them missing, you know, but I think I just had to learn, you know, the way my career's gone, I think it's for the great reason. I'm happy of my career and how it happened, you know, because it made me the fighter I am today, and, I think I'm just becoming who I am, you know, and I'm feeling comfortable. I feel stronger. I'm just, you know, I feel like I got my man strength, basically, you know.
Right.
So
I'm still waiting for mine.
You know, so but my body's even changing. It's just, to me, you know, it just I feel good. I feel stronger. I just feel great, you know. So I think I'm just gonna be more explosive, more combinations, and I'm gonna come hard.
How old are you now?
I'm 24. I'm about to be 25 in October 25th.
I think maybe I missed my man strength stage then. This is, if you're getting
right
it, 24, I might be screwed. Are you still comfortable with this weight? You've been here for a long, long time. You know, 24. Do you feel like your body is saying it's time to move up, or do you want to, you know, compete and finish your campaign and go for a title here at 130?
You know, I want to finish at 130. You know, I'm the kind of guy that, you know, you start something, you finish it. So obviously, I've been at 130. So I want to, you know, be a champion at 130. You know, in the future, I'll go up to 135, then 140. I probably won't go seven just because that's too much. You're bigger there, you know. So
yeah.
I mean, I'll move up in the near future, but I feel comfortable. I'm thinking that way easy. I mean, I have a great nutritionist, Linda Rodriguez. I mean, she helps me out. Kathy, you know, Kathy Garcia. She, you know, we have a schedule, you know, and I follow it, you know, and that's all I can do. And it's been working. They're doing their job.
Right, right. You know, so you knocked out Daniel Jimenez in the second round in Salinas. Your next fight, again, is back at your hometown, and it's going to be against Ira Terry. But, you know, like every fight fan and every media guy, you know, even though you impress and you gave, we always want more. Right?
Right.
That's just
right.
The way,
always.
That's the nature of the beast of the game, that the sport that you're in, right? So,
right.
Saying that, when do we see Eloy Perez step up to a tougher competition? Because, you know, Terry is like,
Oh, I mean, I to be honest with you, I know where you're going.
Right.
Terry
he's been knocked out for like the past two fights, I think. But I have no idea who. I haven't even seen tape on Iron Jared. I don't know who he is, but I mean, you know, I gotta take what I can get in 3 weeks. You know, I only got like 3 weeks notice.
Right.
Who's gonna take that fight to fight Eula Perez in 3 weeks? You know. So I mean, I have to give big props for Ryder for even taking it. You know. So saying
and
that.
And it's what you've been out. This your knockout was what, almost what, a month ago? Are we going?
Yeah.
We're going on a month, right? You know.
Right. So I mean, I took a week off, but I'm always ready. You know, I always take care of myself. You know, I mean, I'm not a champion yet. You know, I can't get too comfortable. You know, I got to keep grinding it out. So I mean, but any other fighter to fight me, I mean, 3 weeks ain't very long. That's you know, that's cutting it.
But when you look at that, you know, because eventually, I mean, if your fans and critics see another Terry on your leisure, you know, like let's say right after this one, and then we get another one, people are going to start pounding.
Right. 2012, I want Jason Littell for 2012, for the beginning. You know, I want to be ranked in IBF.
Uh-huh.
And I want Juan Carlos, the champion, Juan Carlos Salgado, is that his name? The IBF champion at 130? Isn't he from Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I want him, you know.
Uh-huh.
I want to get ranked in IBF, so obviously I got to fight somebody in IBF. So Jason Litton would be great, you know. So, I mean, there's only so much I can do, you know. I got to leave that up to my managing team and my promoting company. But, I mean, 2012 is going to be my year, but I'm chasing Jason Litton. I'm calling you out.
Jason Litton.
What do you think about Adrian Broner?
I think Adrian Broner is a great fighter. I think it'd be an explosive fight for both of us. You know, it may be a great fight. I want to fight Adrian Broner, but honestly, I'm not going to go to Cincinnati. You know, like, he's not going to come to Salinas. How about maybe
mm-hmm.
we get right in the middle somewhere else? It doesn't matter anywhere, but not in our hometowns, you know? I mean, but
yeah.
Also, I mean, I'm telling you as a fighter that I would love to fight him. I'll fight him anytime, anywhere, but not in hometowns. But my promotional company and my management decided to go a different route. But as a fighter, I'm telling you, I would love to fight Adrian Broner, and I'm going to kick his ass.
Do you think with him, he's got a lot of talent? He's a skilled guy, but do you think there's more talent than skill there?
You know, I just think that I work harder. I want it more.
Hmm.
I feel like, you know, I sacrifice more. So I feel like, you know, I'm going to beat him. I mean, I know he's a good fighter. He's, you know, he's undefeated. You got to give him that. He's a great shit talker. I'm a shit talker. So, I mean, you know, I'll be honest. I mean,
right.
We met in Vegas at the Victor Ortiz Mayweather card, and he's talking shit. I mean, you know, I didn't say anything. It's not my character. But, I mean, thinking I'll talk this shit until we're in that ring, though, then you're mine. You know? I mean, but I'm not trying to talk shit. I'm just trying to say, you know, like, as the fighter, I would love to fight him. But, you know, my promotion company, my management team, too, went a different route. It was just getting too slow.
Now, we did talk about, you know, you staying at 130, you know, you're 24 years old still, and you said you're still comfortable. But what about going, you know, dropping a weight division, going to 126? Has that ever been mentioned or thought about, or could you even make a weight like that?
You know, it has been talked about. 126, I think I can make it, but
mm-hmm.
I have to make it be worth making it, you know. I mean, I 130, I'm like 3% body fat, you know, with my nutritionist. We check every time after weigh-ins. It gets low. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I would make one. I think I can make it. I mean, I can tell you I can make it, but it has to be worth it.
What
but
would
it
be worth it
about.
For you? What fighter out there would be worth for you to go to 126?
Gamboa, Juanma Lopez.
I remember one time, man, you were going to call out Gamboa at the ESPN.
Yeah. But the camera didn't show up.
It's still the same thing. I mean, you still have those same feelings that you had about Gamboa in the past?
Well, I mean, I think it'd be a tight fight. I mean, you know, the competition would be tight. I'm a competitor. You know, I want the competition. I want to see, you know, who's better, who worked harder. So I think it'd be a good matchup, you know? And we look alike,
right.
Supposedly, because when I'm walking down, you know, at the hotel, at the MGM, Gamboa, I just keep walking because, you know, I'm not going to turn around. And if I already think Gamboa's a dick. You know, it'd be a great fight, you know, Gamboa.
Look, I could just sit there, you know, muy chingón, okay, bro. You just lost me as a fan, Gamboa.
You're right, you know. It's obvious.
So, you know, I know, you know, me and you have talked, man, numerous times, and you've spoken to Gabriel. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, when I talk to you, you're so aware of your career. Like, you, I know, you know exactly where you want to go with it. So it's got to be a little frustrating. And I know you're very loyal to your team. Your team has been doing a great job. But when you're sitting back and you're looking at everything, you see Andre Ward, Nonito Dornier, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. You see guys that are in a similar, you know, area that you're from. And they're getting praise and they're getting noticed. Eloy, you got to sit there and go, man, I'm 24. I'm not getting any younger. My time needs to be now.
You know, like I've been saying lately, good things take time. Mm-hmm. I think my time will come when it's time, you know, and then I'll be strong. I mean, you know, obviously, good things. Be patient, and I've been new publicist, Richard Charles, great woman. You know, she's been getting me out
right
there. She's been, you know, been getting me in the public eye. She's been doing an amazing time, so I think that's what they needed, just to be more, be seen and be heard of, so, you know, they push those fights. And so 2012 is going to be the year. It really is, you know, for Eloy Perez. I think this time's for me to finally get to that stage, that big stage.
And Jason Litzau, that he's the guy to set it off, right?
Right, you know, and it'd be, but I have to, you know, fight those big names, and I have to make kind of a bang. Like I said, I'm a shit talker, but obviously I gotta keep doing this and, you know, being more aggressive to make things happen, you know?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, this time for sure I'm gonna try to make it out there to go see you, man. What was
that?
You
gotta make it.
I know. I do, bro. I do. I haven't seen you fight live for a minute. I think it's been
ABL, right?
At the beginning of the year was when I saw you over there in San Francisco.
No. In San Francisco, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you got to come out.
Yeah, man, definitely got to come out and hang out with you guys. Well, yeah, I'm all done. I mean, unless Gabriel's got some other questions for you, man. I mean, if not, it was a pleasure again having you on here with Leaving the Ring with us.
No,
was that good?
We did a story. The story will be coming out right before his fight. We did a pretty lengthy interview. And actually, you covered a lot of my points, Dave. That's why I kind of let you go. I hate having to ask the questions twice, and then
right.
Eloy gets bored, and, you know, we all get
oh,
bored.
Oh, no, I mean, Eloy was getting
bored. He was getting bored. Eloy's was making that weird sound in the background every time you talk. He was like, ah.
You know, it's pretty hard, because, you know, I'm probably just like, yeah, breathe out of my mouth. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
jeez.
Oh, man.
You guys got jokes.
Here you say you don't talk shit.
right. But no, Montoya, always a pleasure. You know, I see
you
at the Rent-A-Wreck from David.
Have you been out there in a while? Have you been out to Rent-A-Wreck?
I haven't been out there for a while. It's probably the last time you were out there. But I saw Dave, probably like a month ago.
See?
So,
goes again.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Eloy, man.
We'll have to meet up out there and get some Subway and watch some fights, man. I missed that part.
Right. Well, take care, you guys. I mean, thank you. I really appreciate it, guys. You know, it's always
a pleasure.
Yeah, brother. Right. And I'll stay in touch with you, and I'll see you there at the fights, and tell your publicist, too, man. You take care.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay. You too.
You too.
But there you go. Eloy Perez, the Prince. 130s fighting on the 28th of October in Salinas, California against Ira Terry. Just got to see him step up. You know what I mean? I think that's what everybody's waiting. He said 2012 and a really good fighter, man. I mean, underappreciated right now. And I think it's just because of the level of fighters he's been doing and stuff. When Daniel Jimenez, we did say that he needed to knock him out. This shouldn't be a fighter that should last with him. And he went out there and he did his job. With Terry, I think it's the same thing. Go out there, blow him out of there, get rid of him, so that he'd be ready for 2012. You know, Eloy Perez.
Yeah, that's the question.
Exactly.
He's got good people around him. You know, he's got a great attitude, always a hard worker. And
mm-hmm.
The place we were talking about is this place that we both watch the fights every now and again. And it's
yeah.
I don't want to disclose.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about it. I think I mentioned it on the radio. But it was interesting meeting him there, and I've watched, I don't know, 2-3 fights with him there. A few, I guess McKetsidis goes through there, and all kinds of fight people. the guy that his very first announcing gig was like the last Ali fight. You know, the dude was like 90 years old. They had a lot of good stories. But the point is not, you know, who I hang out with, but Eloy is always a guy that is in shape. Every time I see him, you know, you can see a fighter like between, and sometimes you're like, wow, is that really, you know, so-and-so? And with Eloy, you know, he doesn't pig out. He doesn't seem to party at all. I never saw him drink a beer there. We're all watching the fights and, we're, you know, doing our write-ups and drinking beers and talking. Eloy lives very clean. He's very dedicated to his job. And that's what I really like about him. You know, he takes it very seriously. And I don't think he's gotten the run that he maybe should because he's not the most powerful guy on the planet. He's starting to show that he does have power. And fans always kind of dock you a little bit for that. So it's good to see him do well, man.
Well, his biggest win and most impressive wasn't televised, and I think that's really stole the moment for Eloy Perez when he fought David Rodella and when David Rodella was a factor. And he went out there, outboxed him, and, you know, he did his thing. And also, he was supposed to be tested with Dominic Salcido. Dominic Salcido was supposed to give him major tests. You know, these were two guys that, you know, I wouldn't say bad blood, but when it came to comparisons of styles, a lot of people were kind of making that comparison, saying they were twins. But Eloy went out there and did the same thing, got the win, and was impressive. It's always been a situation for him. You know, I think that if we would have saw the David Rodello, I think he might have been in a much different position that he's in as of right now. You know, and being on Solo Boxeo too at this, you know, which is always a good way to build a fighter, but the time slot is just so difficult for a lot of fans out there that want to watch, you know, Eloy Perez. So they got to catch it back on YouTube, you know. But like I said, 2012, it gets Jason Litzau. That should definitely be on HBO because HBO does like Litzau. But then again, you're getting Ken Hirschman. He might not buy that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. We'll see. Well, you know, Ken likes action, and he doesn't. I expect with that, you know, and Steve has a nice article about it on Max Boxing Today, interview with Ken, and where things are going to go. Ken likes action, and I expect Boxing After Dark to kind of move back to what Showbox was.
Yeah,
it was a Jay Larkin creation, but Seth really, or you know, Seth. I mean, Ken Hirschman really kept that mission statement going. And I expect Boxing After Dark to kind of move back to that. It's not just, you know, we need some dates filled for Al Haymon fighters after dark. But it should be, you know, young prospects that are very much deserving and good fights, you know, crossroads-type fights. That's what it should be is, all right, you want a world championship boxing, you want to be that next level, get through Boxing After Dark or KO Nation as it existed before.
Right.
And let's do some things without Ed Lover. Although I think we should bring back Ed Lover. I enjoyed him. Last thing on Hopkins. This is interesting. It was while you guys were doing some of your questions. Dan Raphael did an update on Hopkins' injury. And basically he's had an MRI and they're waiting for the results on Friday. But in the Hopkins says, well, I'm in a sling. I've been taking the Motrin they gave me, but I'm a vitamin guy, not an aspirin guy. They're like 500 milligram pills, but I'm only taking half at a time. Now, on the photo that Dan Raphael tweeted and that Jose Suleiman is citing in his reversal of the decision and awarding the belt to Hopkins, the diagnosis at the bottom, prescription given, Vicodin, 5 milligrams, not 500, 5 milligrams. So I tweeted at Hopkins. He's gotten a little quiet. He hasn't answered me back. Which is it, 5 milligrams of Vicodin or 500 of Motrin? Or did it change? It's interesting to see the story change now.
Right.
So maybe you know, in checking him out again, they've given him something more. But I'm very curious. Since Dan was the one that broke that story in the beginning, there is no follow-up about the change in medication. So there you have it.
There you go.
You want to run through the fight schedule real quick?
Yeah, let's go through our fight schedule. We only got like 5 more minutes left on the show, and so fight fans can prepare themselves and put it on their board. What fights are going to be happening on Friday and Saturday for the boxing heads?
Friday night in my favorite town, Bangkok, Thailand.
Oh, wow.
Hong Sawak Wong Jang Kang.
Wong Jang Kang.
Jong Kam. Yeah, versus Edgar Souza, 82-3-1 versus 43-6. It's a very tough fight. I think that Wang Jung Kim is still very strong. He's starting to fade a little bit, but I'd like to see. I think Edgar Souza might pull this one out. It's kind of a tough one, but it's in Thailand, so anything can happen. That should be on a stream near you. On Showbox at the Foxwoods Casino in Manchintucket, Connecticut, Showbox features Edwin Rodriguez, 19-0, versus Will Rosinski, 14-0, in a crossroads bout for two young prospects. It's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm looking for Rodriguez to pull it out. Showbox also, Gabriel Brosero, 17-0 versus Daniel Sostra, 11-4-1. Probably going to be a Bracero win. At the Event Center in Far, Texas, on Telepatura, Fidel Maldonado, 11-0 versus Eric Cruz, 12-7-3. That's a prospect fight, obviously. Felix Pedra, 7-0-1 versus Juan Ruiz, who's 6-8. Yet another prospect type fight. On Saturday night, actually, we'll go in the daytime on a stream near you at the Ludwigsburg Arena in Germany. Marco Hook versus Rogelio Rossi, 33-1 versus 17-2-1 for the WBO cruiserweight belt. Germany, Marco Hook, probably going to be a win for him.
Right.
At Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York, later that night on HBO, Nonito Donaire, 26-1 versus Omar Narvaez, 35-0-2. He's undefeated. He's a champion. But I think that Nonito Donaire is going to come out victorious.
Right.
Mikey Garcia is on support on that card. 26-0 versus Juan Martinez, 19-12-1. Gee, I wonder who's going to win that fight.
Right.
At the arena, Roberto Duran in Panama City, Panama.
Right.
Miguel Acosta, 29-4-2 versus Richard Abril, 16-2-1. I think it's kind of an experience mismatch. Acosta should come out with this one. And if you're really into the club-type fights, you can go to the Tropicana Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, for Vinny Matalone, 33-7, versus Mike Shepard, 19-12-1. In support there is Chad Witherspoon versus Ty Cobb, Shimon Alvarez versus Christopher Fernandez, and two fighters I've never heard of. And there you are. That's your weekend fight schedule.
That is your weekend fight schedule there, boxing heads. Again, man, it's always fun. It's always great to listen to everybody. Oh, actually, you know what? Let's just take some more calls. We got three more minutes, so let's just take one more last call here on Leaving the Ring. So let's go with Robert. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring, brother. You want to talk Mayweather and Pacquiao. Go ahead.
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
Doing good, man.
I just want to, you know, kind of go over, you know, I'm kind of tired of waiting, you know, for the fight. Just, I know some other boxing fans are kind of losing, you know, it's losing its sting, you can say. What do you guys think about that?
I don't think it's ever going to happen, to tell you the truth. We've said this, God, I don't even know how long. How long have we been saying this, Sir Gabe?
For a while.
I think it's going on 2 years. We've been saying that it's not going to happen, and it still leads like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I would say that. It's probably not going to happen. And I do agree with your point, though. The luster is off of it a bit. Manny's showing his age a little bit. Floyd isn't showing his age as much. You know, the point that this should have happened is after their big wins, and it didn't, and then it didn't again. And at this point, I'm kind of just done talking about them, you know, until they really get in the ring with each other. I mean, you know, Floyd gave us a nice challenge with Ortiz, although we knew
right.
that was going to go. And Manny is still fighting, you know, fighting another older guy, somebody, you know, he's fought before, but still. I think they just make, until there's like $100 million-plus in pot for both guys that they could split, you know, down the middle and make 60 grand or, you know, make $60 million and walk away comfortably, I don't see how this fight happens. They can make the same amount of money or close to it fighting guys they know they're going to beat. I think that's,
you know,
really the name of the game.
The thing, too, is that if you kind of really look at what both promoters are doing, they're already aligning their fighter with other fights so that this fight will never happen. Manny Pacquiao getting at Juanma Marquez, but look at Timothy Bradley comes into that sweepstakes. Now you got Floyd Mayweather, who beats Victor Ortiz, but there's been big talk about Amir Khan possibly. I think that both promoters are realizing these guys are not going to do it. It's not going to happen. I think you could either blame both parties or one party, but one of them is just not going to happen. And me personally, I don't see it happening unless one guy looks terribly terrible in their next fight, you know?
Yeah.
But
I would say so.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling in, brother. It's always a pleasure,
yeah, thanks
man.
A lot, guys.
Okay. Well, there you go. Another show with Leave It in the Ring. If you missed the beginning, you can catch a 3-hour all talk about boxing here. And an hour after, it's off the air at leavetheming.com. And be sure to check out Undisputed Fight Magazine. Be a trooper. Be a hardcore boxing head. And go get the magazine. It's only $1.99 or $9.99 for the whole year. Anyways, I'm your boy 97 Rough, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, Mr. Lover himself. Like that.
Lover man. All right, till next week.
There you go. All right, till next week.